Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We're back. I know we've been out for a minute, but me and Gabriel are back, and we're ready to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. 3 hours of boxing talk. I hope everybody's doing great. Hope everybody's having a good time. And we're ready. Hey, Vic Darchinian. Can we ask for anything more? You know, when we see a guy that we think is going to be on his way out and decides to say, nah, I'm going to stick around for a little bit, all you can do is just go, man, good for him. He really put himself back in that position where he used to be. This guy, he's kind of made sure that he lets everybody know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stick around for some time. Gabe? Get your phone on mute, Gabriel.
Yeah, I did. You told me to mute it. Vic Darchinian is why we watch boxing. You know, guys like that, just when you think they're done, and you know, honestly, I looking at the matchup when it was first proposed, I just didn't like it for Vic. I thought,
right,
you know, he's a guy that hasn't looked good at 18, and now he's going to go to 122 against a young gun. It just feels all wrong to me. And the only thing that was all wrong was how I felt about the fight, because he went in there. I think, you know, the kid fought bravely, but he absolutely fought the wrong fight. I mean, he's taller than Vic. He's got decent power. You know, now we're finding out it's not quite as devastating as we thought, although, he did hurt Vic late. He just fought all wrong for fighting a smaller guy. And Vic, to his credit, was very sharp. He got in there, and he got into his awkward little rhythm. And once he gets in that rhythm, it's really hard to time where he's coming from. He starts putting out his hands and shifting them and then leaping in. Southpaw is already hard. Then you get hit with headbutts and elbows and leaping in shoulders and then not to mention all the left hands going over the top or underneath. It was just a nightmare, dude. Del Valle didn't know what to do.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. I think what it is, and I think a lot of folks underestimate Vic Darchinian because of that style. It's a style that you can't really practice for. You can't really be prepared completely and fully. It's one of those type of styles that once you get in the ring with, you have to figure it out. You have to go on the fly. You have to be fast-paced on your thoughts of what you need to do next. That's the type of style that Vic Darchinian brings. And, with Orlando, we just kind of saw his face expression told – he just said everything about that match. Each round, in and out, each round. I mean, his corner was giving him, I thought, fairly good advice, but it was hard to execute because of the timing. Timing is everything, and that threw off the kid and all of his game plan. It just really had him on the edge.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing. You could just see it slowly but surely. As the fight progressed, the kid just didn't – he didn't stop trying – but I didn't really get a sense that they were making adjustments, do this, try this. He just didn't really have much of a game plan to begin with, and he definitely didn't have a A, B, C, or D. It just wasn't – I think what he probably learned out of it was just that there is no quit in him. I'll give him that.
Right.
But at the same time, it showed kind of, yeah, you've got all the punches, but there was a serious aspect. Maybe he didn't take the fight that serious. Maybe he didn't prepare quite the way he should have. Obviously, he didn't. Or maybe he just thought, oh, Vic's old, and they're giving me this old guy. He's smaller. I should just knock him out and be done with it. But
I honestly thought he was prepared. I honestly thought that he was mentally ready for Vic. But it just goes back to that old saying, if you know, it's a, styles make fights. And this was a style that just did not fit him. This was a style that obviously just he couldn't figure out. And it's all comes down and boils down to experience. I mean, Abner Morris did the right thing with Vic. And even in times, you could see with Abner Morris, who has showed he's a world-class champion, he's a world-class fighter, that he had problems with Vic in the beginning. He had to adjust to him. He had to adapt to him. You know, and that's something that the kid lacked. He lacked that next step of adjusting, the next step of saying, you know what, this is not working out for me. I got to do something different. And he wasn't able to do that. His corner was asking for it. His corner understood it. His corner knew that he had to do something. The only thing I disagreed about, I disagreed with him, with his corner, I forgot the trainer's name, was saying that there was still a lot of fight in Orlando, but at the same time, there's a lot of fight that just kind of left him there to dry out, man. He was getting caught with some vicious shots. He was getting hit a lot, and he did tag Vic. But with the commentary, they were saying he looked rocked. I thought he got stunned for a brief second, but his conditioning just geared in, and it saved him. It got him out of that little daze. It was too quick of a to really sit there and say, oh, he was completely hurting out. You know what I mean?
That was the thing, you know, when HBO got in the corner and was like, do you think you should stop it? You know, that's why Max Kellerman. I thought it was kind of out of line. I didn't think they should be over there bugging the, you know. I did kind of think, you do have to think about it. When do you pull the plug in a fight like this?
Right.
You know? But either the kid wasn't so hurt or dazed or out of it that you know, and they left him in there and he hurt Vic, you know, in the ninth round. And almost put him down, you know, or at least had him hurt to the point, you know, if he would have been smarter, gone to the body and really been methodical about it, he could have put Vic down and they all look like geniuses and the kid passes the test. HBO had no business in that corner, bugging them and trying to give us more coverage. But really, I think there are certain things that are sacred. I don't know if we're going to talk about Amir Khan and Kell Brook. I don't know if you had a chance to see that video, but they were on Sky Sports.
I heard it. I hadn't had a chance to watch the video and stuff like that, you know, because of my schedule, rushing home, and I'm just able to kind of glimpse at things. But
the thing that bothered me about it, and it's why I bring it up, there are certain things that are sacred, and like Khan goes into the fact that they've sparred before or talks about their sparring before and that he used to school Kell Brook. Like, one, you don't insult the guys unless you're like leading up to a fight, which they're kind of not. You know, you don't really do that. But there's certain things that happen in the gym. And I know a lot of guys, you hear this all the time.
Right.
You know, this is how the sparring really went. And it's kind of a secret. It's kind of accepted that it's a place where you can fail miserably and do okay in the fight. But there's a code. And Amir just broke it. It was kind of bizarre. And
but he's done that before.
Yeah.
It's not the first time that Amir's allowed his mouthpiece just start ramping away. And just keep going and stuff. I mean, he's even talked down on guys that he's facing, the amateurs, and he's beaten, you know. Victor Ortiz is one that comes to mind. You know, he would mention he knocked out Victor Ortiz, and Victor Ortiz would bring back. I don't remember that, but yeah, he did win, but I don't remember the knockout. Amir Khan, to me, I think it's more of a buildup to, you know, a lot of air in his chest. He needs that. Just because the fact that I think that motive, that way of kind of putting down other fighters is his motivation to keep him at the level that he feels he needs to be at mentally in competition.
Yeah. You know, and jumping back to what you were saying about, you know, Vic, it's a really good win, just to close out that subject. It's an excellent win, but you're right. Like, he's not back, like, quote-unquote back. You know, like, they started calling out Rigondeaux afterwards, and it was like, wait a minute, you know? Like, Orlandito is not Rigondeaux. You know, you're going from a prospect who hasn't even proven himself to a guy that, you know, he doesn't have that many fights, but we all know that Rigo's truly the real deal. Where do you want to see Darchinian go to?
You know, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, man. I think as soon as we let some callers in, they're definitely going to throw out some names, and probably some name that I'll end up piggyback riding on. Because right now, I don't know. I mean, Rigondeaux would be a good name for him, but you go back with the whole thing of a little too early, too soon. I don't know. I know Darchinian would love a shot of the winner of Morris and Moreno. That would be a great you know, a great fight. I mean, going back, talking about fouls and what happened with the fight this past Saturday, Vic said he was a victim of fouls. You know, Vic has claimed he's been a victim of fouls with Adner Morris, among other fighters that have said, you know, set their claim of being fouled. I'd like to see where he goes from there. I mean, I don't, you know, here's the thing, and some fans have jumped back on that boat, you know, where they're like, he's back in that category of the who's again. I thought this was a great win, and I don't know how you feel about this, Gabriel, and I don't know how the listeners feel about this. I thought this was a great win. I thought it was a great way of getting his name and keeping it there in the limelight. But he was fighting a guy, really, this was the best opposition he had ever faced. This was an experience that really truly told us exactly at what point of career he's at. That's all it answered. And it allowed us to understand that Vic Darchinian still has enough to give upcomers all they can handle. Can he handle, though, the top guys, the elite guys, the guy that beat him? We don't know. I don't know how fresh, I don't know how much adjustment. I didn't see a new Vic or a revived Vic. I saw a fresh Vic at a weight division that he doesn't really carry his punch but can hold his own.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think it said more about Orlandito than it did about Vic in some ways. It's like, yes, he's still fresh, and with the right matchup, he can get the guy, but it was as much experience as anything. I mean, it was a pretty rough fight early on. That's what I was surprised by, was that they came together and they really went at it for the first four or five rounds. And the whole time I was thinking, this kid's fighting the exact wrong fight. He's trying to overpower Vic with his size, but he's just getting outcrafted. Vic was being kind of dirty in there. He was using his head and fighting for space, and the kid kept banging into him and getting the worst of it. It was just all wrong, you know. But I think, you know, when you look at the division and you kind of go, okay, well, this is where Del Valle was, hadn't really even proven himself. And then you go, okay, well, let's look around the division. Yeah, you got, you know, the winner of Moreno Matas, then, you know, Donaire and Toshiaki Nishioka, they're going to fight. Now, those winners are probably not going to fight each other because it's top-ranked Golden Boy. So Vic kind of has two directions he can go in for those guys. Those are both any combination of those fights are very, very good. Everything else below it, I mean, you got like Scott Quigg, who's about to be the mandatory to Regondiao's belt. I wonder if they would even move him in that direction. Rico Ramos is out there, but you're also looking, you know, with Vic, you probably want the big fights. You probably don't want the little ones. And we're a few minutes away from asking him ourselves.
He already did it. You know what I mean? I think his management, they're smart enough to understand, we already did that. We got that option. We wanted to prove that we're still able to keep to continue and compete with the best. I think that this display was the way for Vic's team and his management to go, okay, we did what you asked. Now it's our turn. That's business. You know, if I was managing a fighter and he had a few losses already, he had lost his last two fights or so, and the networks or the promoter gave me the option of facing an up-and-comer, young, strong kid that has some future there that is a hopeful, and I thought my fighter can beat the guy and take him to deep waters and drown him, I would take that fight. But in exchange of getting a big fight, I don't see him trying to do it again with another up-and-comer as a stepping stone. I strongly believe that Vic Darchinian and his team believe I am not a stepping stone. I'm still a major player, a champion without a bout, a contender, a real contender.
Yeah, that's the thing. I want to see, you know, I want to see where Vic goes from here. I'd like to see him in the aforementioned matchups. You know, Montiel is listed at 122 or is lurking around in that area. That's an interesting fight. You can kind of plug Vic in because he's a name and because he just showed on network that he still got it in some respects. You can mix and match. I don't know if we need to see the rematch, but Arce Darchinian was a fun fight the first time. You could probably do that one again. I don't know. You know, we'll see.
I wouldn't mind that one, to tell you the truth.
I went to that fight live here. It was a good fight. I'd see it again. You know, it was brutal. But I don't know if they'd want to do it again.
Right.
But we're about a minute. I guess we can call him in at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me start dialing them in. And fight fans, you know, we're gonna call other folks in as well. Let other people get in on the subject here. Just hang tight with us while we call Mr. Vic D'Artagnan, the Raging Bull. He definitely was raging Saturday night, you know.
Well, Dave's doing that. In other news, today was announced Ali Adams, a British heavyweight, has been suspended for 2 years following an anti-doping violation.
The area code or telephone number as dialed is not valid.
Things that make you go,
I'm double-checking the number.
Go right ahead. And like I said, fight fans, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio. 3 hours of boxing talk with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan. Every Thursday night, 5 p.m., between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. Pacific, and 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. So as soon as we find out about this number here, we will definitely...
Huh, that's weird. I'm just texting them waiting to find out. Oh, so to finish what I was saying, I'm just going to read from the Telegraph today in England. Ali Adams is the latest boxer to break anti-doping rules. The ban meted out on heavyweight Ali Adams on Thursday, a suspension that will last until June 12, 2014, for 2 years following an anti-doping rule violation, is the latest in a succession of positive drug tests in boxing this year. This is by Gareth A. Davies. Wow. And Adams, I guess, he used danazolol, it's a synthetic anabolic steroid in the male sex hormone, dihydrotestosterone. It promotes protein synthesis, leading to muscle growth that could lead to increases in muscle force production. We all know what synthetic testosterone is. It's just kind of interesting that here we have Lamont Peterson and Andre Berto. Two guys, you know, particularly Lamont Peterson was caught with synthetic testosterone. Berto was caught with nandrolone metabolites. These guys are talking about doing their next fights, and everybody's arguing about that. No suspensions, no license issues, it sounds like. They're just going to go right back to the networks, and everybody's going to pretend like nothing happened. It's very interesting. I got something that I'm kind of working on drug-wise for probably either later this week or early next week. I won't go into it now, but I don't want to tip my hand. But it's just kind of interesting that the guys that were caught by VADA, that stuff is just going to be flat-out ignored.
Right. But everybody's an expert now in VADA,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it seems like the commission's...
The area code or telephone...
I'm waiting to find out from his management what the deal is with the number. Because we're calling him from Australia, so I guess it's a sort of country code issue. But I don't know if we have to dial 01 or something like that out of it. But we will keep trying. But I just find this interesting that, you know, over here we're not doing anything. Over there, I mean, you get caught with danazolol and Larry Obamawo, he got caught with, you know, several substances, including
radio.
And he gets 4 years. What are we doing over here? I mean, their testing may not be up to snuff with ours, but at the same time, you know, their suspensions are definitely a deterrent. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez would not be on his second offense right now.
Julio, you know, writes out a letter and he gets a slap in the hand. He has to go to rehab, and that's the order of his suspension. It's a complete rehab. It's one of those name games type of deals. It's who you know
today,
in business.
WBC, it's interesting. They had no jurisdiction. Texas, probably, you know, 4 or 5 million, at least over three, I think, for the fight. We'll see what the pay-per-view numbers yield for him, or we won't. I guess that's kind of rough, 20 grand. an indefinite suspension from the WBC, but I mean, there's three other belts, so who gives a shit? And the commissions haven't been on. I guess he's going to have a hearing in October, so we'll see. But I'm really curious to see where Lamont Peterson lands. I know everybody's talking about him fighting Tim Bradley. There's the Judah purse bid that they did for Judah Peterson. There's a few things going on there, and one writer told me that and Steve keeps saying that it's going to be Peterson Bradley in Miami. But at the same time, I've heard from other sources that Peterson actually does want the Judah fight. I guess it's a bit of an insurance policy, if you will. If the Brad route, then they'll do something with the Judah fight, find some way to promote it on some sort of network because HBO and Showtime ain't having it. So a lot going on. The one that I really want to talk about, and let me just take one second to figure out what's going on with Mr. Garchinian, but the Manny and Floyd defamation case, I don't think anybody's really talked about that.
No. Yes.
Right now I'm trying to do two things. Are you trying the number again?
I'm trying the number again. I'm trying something different here. See if it works here for us. No. Okay, go ahead with your...
I just find it. I find it interesting that nobody's really talking about it, but at least nobody's really attempting to find out about it. Is what were the terms of the agreement? I know that obviously one of them was Floyd Mayweather apologizing for ever insinuating that he did steroids, and it was kind of a group apology, you know, Roger and Floyd Sr. But what was the financial agreement there? I mean, I don't think Manny spent all that time and all that money.
Money, right, exactly.
And to really feel seriously that his reputation had been destroyed and that it had to be an apology out there publicly without some sort of money-changing hands. And I, at the same time, I have to kind of point back to the work that became rather controversial and a lot of people feel has ruined my reputation in some circles permanently. You'd always have to kind of look back at the moves that happened. Pacquiao's people asked for the medical records that I had written about and talked about.
And asked for?
Well, I didn't ask for the medical records. I was asking about the contracts.
Right.
And was there something hidden? I was accused of spreading a rumor that Floyd had tested positive three times. Pacquiao's people, I either got wind of it or were a step ahead of me. I never quite figured that out. And they requested the medical records. USADA motioned to quash that they didn't want to release those medical records, even though USADA was willing to release a press release saying, oh, this guy's totally clean. So I'm kind of wondering about the timing that all of a sudden when that motion to quash, there was never anything ruled on it. All of a sudden we just, you know, a month or so later, we get a settlement, some sort of agreement, but it's secret and no one can talk about what went down. I wonder why that is. And I think the thing, you know, I don't want to make this all about me because it's not. But what's dangerous is when you start banning media that's asking the right questions. The real danger is not getting away with it so much as everybody allowing it to happen and that nobody's really asking those questions. I sent out a request on Twitter to the people that were allowed to go to the press conference this week in L.A. for Golden Boy. Somebody asked Richard Schaefer or somebody in charge there at Golden Boy, what happened to their drug testing policy with their fighters?
What happened? They got popped, and they decided to back off. But originally, they didn't even want the drug testing. Let's be honest here.
They never did. It was never their idea.
Right.
I think their actions have shown that. So to me, everybody kind of went, oh, now we can have the Manny and Floyd fight. Nobody's ever really asking the right questions. I mean, sometimes they do, but generally no. You know, I had one writer tell me that they cover drugs in Nevada, and they have for years, but writing out that somebody tested positive is not the same thing as really like covering it, trying to educate people, and then trying to go further, like the questions that I was asking before I got my ban. I wish people would, because I don't really have the access to Golden Boy's fighters and to that company and to those executives. So I wish somebody else would ask those questions and find out. But somebody else, we can go to the Mayweather camp, and they always brag about the access they got and say, hey, how much did you settle on? Let's try to leak that information. Nobody ever does, because everybody's kind of acting bipartisan while pointing the fingers at me. So anyways, off my soapbox, let's figure out where the hell happened to Vic Darjanian.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
go right ahead. And that's when you do that, I'm going to be patching in some fight fans here. We want to talk some boxing here, 3 hours of boxing talk. 347-215-7598, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya, man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. And while he looks for Victor Chinley, let's get some fight fans we want to talk about. Good old Raging Bull. CT, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? I think my phone might go out of reception, but sorry if it does. I think Victor Chinian that night looked pretty good. I picked him to win the fight. I just thought that Duval, what I saw from Duval, he wasn't ready for somebody like Darchinian at the moment. I mean, he's a pretty good fighter, but his whole game plan, I agree with you guys, it just, he wasn't pumping his jab. He wasn't throwing no jabs to me. He kept throwing that straight right cross, which is smart, but I think they did a good job by saying, you know, he's a natural left-handed fighter, fighting as a right-handed fighter. I think probably the moment got to him. I think, you know, Darchinian, on his behalf, showed me a little bit of boxing skills, even though, you know, he wants a knockout. You can see he showed a little bit of patience in the ring that night.
You know, I think that if he was down to his weight where he had campaigned originally and debuted it, his power would have been a definite
yeah.
thing there. You know, I mean, we've seen Vic tap other guys continuously, and you see the markup. With Duval, it was tap. He didn't even take a step back. He was able to eat him up, but he did take punishment, and you saw that. And you saw those shots. It didn't take an outside appearance toll, but it did take an inside appearance toll. And then in the mind, too, you know what I mean? He was getting clipped with a guy. He just couldn't figure him out. Couldn't time him right. Couldn't get his rhythm. Couldn't step it up. And I think I agree with you. I think, you know, the pressure of stepping up and living up to what people were hoping he had, that standard they were looking for, it just kind of messed him up, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would actually like to see Darchinian fight. Sorry, I forgot his name. He's a son of a featherweight junior. I'm sorry, Arce beat him for the belt.
You're talking about Alfredo Vasquez Jr.
Yeah, I would like to see Darchinian either fight him or even Rico Ramos. Maybe one of along those level type of, you know, junior featherweights.
So can he fight somebody on the level of Rico Ramos without me having to see Rico Ramos? is that possible? No, I hear you, though. You look around that weight class, and there's some fights, you know. Montiel would be an interesting fight with him. Somebody else threw out Carl Frampton. Was another one. Frampton comes alive. That would be an interesting fight. But I like the Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. Idea. That's an interesting fight because of the athleticism involved. I think Jorge Arce was a little stationary with his head for my taste for Victor Chinian. I kind of don't want to see him stand there and take those kind of power shots again. As much as I enjoyed the first fight, I think Arce's got to be real careful, and he's being real careful about who he's fighting. Dave, to answer your question, I'll just answer it on there. Let's flip over, and I'll see if I can grab Mr. DeCubis and see if we can't do the Louis DeCubis report. I'm not sure what's going on with Vic. The Australian contact over there is probably not answering his phone, so I'm kind of stuck. Don't really know what to do. So let's get Louis DeCubis on.
Okay, sounds good. Really quick before we let CT go, he did want to talk about the other fights that were on Saturday night. Edwin Rodriguez, who looked good. He looked sharp at 168, big 168, and was able to do a lot of damage. I thought HBO was being a little tough on him, saying that they didn't really see a whole lot. I did. I thought I saw a little bit more volume from him. I thought I saw a little bit more combinations, and I saw a little bit more confidence. It might have been because of who he was facing, but you know, he didn't really sit back. He really pressed forward, and he wanted to basically kind of show the reasoning he was a headline for HBO.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he looked very sharp that night, even more this fight than against George. I would love to see him fight a fighter like maybe a Sakhi Obika, somebody who will test him. You know what I mean? I would like to see him fight somebody like that. Maybe not a Kelly Pavlik yet, but a Sakhi Obika type fighter. You know, somebody that's going to be rough with him, show him a little bit more experience in the ring, very tough fighter to fight. I think he'll test Rodriguez very much.
Can he fight a Sakhi Obika type without me seeing Sakhi Obika? why all the rough and tumble guys that make it an ugly fight? Yeah, but I hear you, though. I mean, I look at him and I don't see – there's nothing about him that really excites me. His toughness, that works for me. The fact that he grinds it out. And that you're right, he did come out going, you know, I understand that people think I'm kind of an ESPN guy or that I shouldn't be the main event on HBO. Let me put on a show and prove him wrong. I respect that he did that. I thought he should have got the guy out sooner. But
hey, the guy was a tough cookie. I mean, come on, you know, I think
the guy took those shots.
He
man.
Took those shots. Yeah. He ate them up. He was rocked. He did the Diego Corrales by spitting out the mouthpiece. It wasn't spit out. It was knocked out. But
yeah.
At the same time, I gave him the credit of absorbing the punishment. How many guys, realistically, how many guys would have sat there and take those shots and not have a face of discouragement? This kid, they call it El Monstro, he was taking some Monstro shots, but at the same time, he was being a stubborn nightmare, you know, for Edwin. No matter what, it was going great for Edwin and Ronnie Shields, but I for a moment was thinking that Edwin was going to gas out and this kid was going to be able to turn it up and come on, but it didn't happen. You know, Rodriguez's his stamina was there. He, you know, his preparation was done correctly, and he was able to just continue doing what he wanted to do in this fight. He rested when he wanted to rest, and he fought when he wanted to fight.
Yeah,
it's that dude took some shots. I mean, I'll give him that, and he was. Not very cooperative, you know, in terms of the mouthpiece and all that. But still, what are you going to do? You know, he got the guy out of there, and it was, you know, it wasn't. I didn't think as compelling. I mean, his problem was that he just had to follow Vic Darchinian in what I thought was an upset performance. Other people were like, you know, why were you picking against Vic, and why was he even the underdog? But I was like, have you seen his last couple fights? But yeah,
we didn't have the chance to even talk about that, and I honestly thought that a lot of folks were counting out Vic Darchinian, and I didn't really want to count him out because of the style that he brings. It's a really hard style to time. It's a real hard style. You know what? Look at Psycho Bika. He's almost he's a really weird type of style to face. He's a, you know, Ward was even had. You know, minorly, he had some trouble with them in the beginning until we figured him out. But he's one of those guys that's going to have to take 2 to 3, even 4 rounds to adjust to, figure out. Edwin Rodriguez, I like what Ronnie Shields has been doing with them. I did see some improvement. I saw some more aggressive. He was much more aggressive. Psycho Bika may shut him down or make him really fight through it. That's a good matchup. It's a good test for him. But I would still lean towards Bika. Bika's a tough, tough cookie to crack as well. Real tough guy, and he uses everything. He just doesn't use his fists. He uses his head, his elbows, his chest, his shoulders. He's a real good test. The only concern I would have for Bika, he's going to look like a much smaller man against Rodriguez.
Yeah. What did he gain, over 20 pounds overnight?
Overnight, man. He looked like Julio for a minute.
A little big, you know. That's it's just funny to me how all the lead up of Martinez Chavez. It's like, you know, this guy's going to be 20 pounds more than my, you know, Sergio, who's you know, very tiny and is really just a 130 pounder and 160 pound frame, and then there's no mention of that when it's his guy that's like gaining 20 pounds, you know, from way into the fight. It's just. It's like Lou is wont to say, and you know, bless Lou. He's having, you know, a nice run of luck, and the guy earns it. But and we'll talk more about something else that's interesting involving Lou in a bit. But it's like he says about the belt; they don't matter until they do. And a guy gaining 20 pounds overnight doesn't matter unless it does.
Oh, absolutely,
you
of
know?
Course. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. It's always a pleasure.
All right, thanks a lot.
You know who's a nice fight for Edwin Rodriguez? And CT, thank you, man. It's always good. He calls in every time, and it's always a good call. George Groves versus Edwin Rodriguez. That's a fun fight. Edwin Rodriguez versus Nathan Cleverley is kind of a sloppy fight. And it's, you know, and Cleverley is, you know, obviously he's a 75er. He's not a 68er. But I'm talking in terms of style and size and everything. I think that's a really fun fight. There's things for him to do. You know, I think he'll be even like a Lucien Boutte versus him would be kind of an interesting fight because I think he'd be pressure and he'd be tough. Are we calling in Louis de Cubis?
Louis de Cubis. See if he answers here for us. Yeah, man, a tough night fighting everybody. I guess we need to take a few weeks off and stuff. Nobody wants to answer and talk to us.
Please
anymore.
Leave your message for 30.
Oh, you know what it is? Tim Starks told them that it would probably not be professional today.
Hey, you know what? Really quick, before we even get in and calling back Lou DeCupis, hey, kudos to WBO featherweight Orlando Cruz, who announced that he's a proud gay man. Guy's been in the game for quite some time. Excellent Olympian. And, you know, he went up, and that's a tough deal. You know, tough deal. He's been fighting for over 24 years and decided to come out and, you know, brave man. And first off, you know, taking punches, getting in the ring, risking your life for pure entertainment for other people to follow you and praise you is a tough deal and a tough trade to get involved in. But at the same time, living a lifestyle where, I know certain people out there that like the opposite, the same sex, you know, and they have to stay hidden for a while when they come out, you know, you see what they go through. For this athlete to kind of hide it and then finally say, you know what, I'm just going to relieve it and see what happens from there. Hey, man, good for you. You know, good for you. Now you get to live life the way you wanted to live life and stuff. But, hey, speaking of other queens out there, I heard Martin Ortega decided to back out of the fight.
Well, you know, I wouldn't even give him that honor of calling him that.
Absolutely, I wouldn't either.
I've known some drag queens that are much tougher than that gentleman.
I refer him more of a spit on the wall. I told you that fight wasn't going to happen. You know, I remember when you called me up and you told me about it. And what did I tell you? I said he's going to find any way, anyhow, to back out of it. You know, and that's exactly what he did. But hey. That's how things go, man. Now you know how fighters feel when their scheduled opponent doesn't follow through.
You know, that's the thing I was just going to say, and I don't want to, again, you know, make it about me or dwell on it too much, but the thing I'll say about this, and you knew this about me, is that I gave myself into the process.
Right.
And I went through – I was going through a pretty hard training camp that had its ups and downs, and I learned a lot about this business, about – different fighting techniques. I talked to several different top guys that all were like all into it and loved the idea and gave me pointers. Now I know what it's like to be all ready to go and a week out, the guy backs out of the fight. And that's yet another lesson. And just little mental things, you know, the fact that you're always thinking about everything that you do kind of feeds into where
Please
you're headed.
Leave your message for 305.
it leads into where you're headed mentally. Everything feeds into it. You know it. As an amateur boxer, you went through it. And I learned that. And this is the thing that Mark is going to have to live with for the rest of his life. He didn't even try. He's the one that called it out. He's the one that actually – and I'll never tell people publicly what happened. It wasn't a Twitter war thing. It was something very personal. He crossed the line very personally, privately. And – he's the one that called it out. He's the one that publicized it. He's the one that made a big deal about it. And he's now the one that had to hide behind Tim Starks, of all people.
Well,
you ran from a fight with me, of all people. I'm not a tough guy. And you're going to have to live with that. You didn't even try. You'll never actually fully be a man because of things like this, because of a moment like this. Learn a damn thing. I learned a lot.
Right.
Mark learned what a coward he is. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, he learned that a long time ago. I've had my run-in with Mr. Yuckmouth and people that were there. They witnessed what kind of a guy he was. I knew what kind of guy he was. And now you know what kind of a guy he is. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let's talk some boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk. We're talking about the back out from Mr. Yuckmack Ortega backing out of fighting Gabriel Montoya, which was scheduled October 13th. I had my ticket to fly out there, dude. I had my suitcase packed up, and just like every other great fight, falls apart. We're not going to be able to witness two guys duke it out, riders getting in there and sparring, which was called unprofessional. But I want to move on away from that. I want to get back to the fights. I want to talk about, you know, Brandon Rios and Mike Alvarado, the Mile High. We talked about his nickname, the Mile High. You know, Brandon, who's venturing into a weight division that he hasn't tested himself out, you know. I mean, this guy walks around above 150 pounds, but he's going to be fighting a guy that walks around almost around that weight or much or a little bit heavier, and a guy that's known to bang with you, a guy that's known to take punches, absorb punishment, but continue moving forward, continue to try to get his win. We saw that with Prescott, who was a much smaller guy, though, but who was very precise in his combinations and his punches. But Alvarado was able to, you know, weather it through and get his win by stopping Prietis Prescott. You know, Brandon Rios has been known to do that as well, but he's been doing it against smaller guys. You know, Lamont Peterson, I would have to say, is not that small of a guy, but I don't think he walks around truly at 160 or a little below that, you know. And he's not a big puncher. Mike Alvarado, this guy can bring – he brings some stone in those gloves. But same thing with Brandon Rios. This is a hell of a test. I when you think of Brandon Rios, who they call himself – when he called himself Bam Bam, people around him call him Bam Bam – and you see him at 135, you definitely sit back and go, yeah, he bangs a lot of his opponents. But at the same time, you'll wonder, with that weight advantage, cutting all that weight, how much of a Bam Bam would he be facing a guy that can equally or come in heavier? We're going to find that out. I'm really curious about it. I'm wondering how that 5 pounds has made a difference for him, because even cutting a pound is going to make a big difference, you know, when you're stepping into the ring. But he's able to not cut 5 pounds. He's not starving himself. He's not rejecting his chance of, you know, of getting a little bit extra into his body. So we're going to, I don't know, do we see a fresh Brandon Rios, or do we see a Brandon Rios that was good at 135, but just not that good 5 pounds up?
That's the thing. I'm very and actually try him again right now, Mr. DeCubis. He's writing for us.
Okay, I will.
I'm very interested by this fight, you know, because you do have a guy in Brandon moving up, and you wonder, okay, well, how far can he go? Is he a welterweight? Is he, you know, kind of bursting at the seams to kind of even shoot past 40 and develop one day into a full welter? Or is 140 going to be where he topped out? Or was 130 where he truly had all his advantages? I know he's a solid fighter. He's got all the tools.
Please leave your message for 305.
Wow. I tell you what I'm thinking here is, because, you know, when you see guys cut themselves in weight, there's two things that happens. It really deteriorates your muscles, you know, by, you know, fluctuating in your weight, but it also kind of slows you down. I'm wondering, with those extra 5 pounds, you know, not sacrificing those 5 pounds, is Brandon going to look a little quicker? Is he going to look a little more fresh? Or are you going to see some fatigue in his muscles?
That's the thing, you know, I look at Mike Alvarado and I go, there's a welterweight waiting to happen. He's actually bursting at the seams, you know, with his body. I think he's in solid shape. You know, when I interviewed him here in Los Angeles, he already looked, you know, on weight, you know, as far as training camp goes, and doesn't look like he's really going to kill himself. It's interesting. Is Brandon going to be replenished?
Hello?
Is Alvarado going to be drained?
Hey, Lou. What's up, brother?
Yep.
Luis, ¿qué pasó? Good, man. How you doing?
Everything's good, brother. How you doing?
We're doing great, brother. We're doing great over here, man. Just doing 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring. So we got some news. What's up? What's the news? What's the news? We need a break over here on the air.
No news. You know, we're just working on a few different things, you know. Here in Camp Ballara now, you know, just getting ready for this Bonas fight and working Robert's next fight and just working a few different things.
Now, what's going on with Robert Guerrero? You know, one minute I was hearing Timothy Bradley. Now we're hearing that he's not going to be part of that. I mean, Alberto, what's going on with that? I mean, what direction do you guys are looking to send him?
I mean, the most best thing I'd tell you is that, you know, Robert just wants to fight the best. You know, that's why he was so adamant about fighting, you know, Tim Bradley. He thought he was one of the best fighters out there, 47, and you know, it was a fight we worked real hard to get it done, and we really feel that Bradley's the one that had a lot to do over pulling out of that fight. So now we're just looking at a few different guys. You know, there's LaDanya, you know, in 2 weeks, Alexander fights. You know, Berto looks like might be fighting K-9, you know, if not,
right.
And he's another possibility. They're just all different types of possibilities. One thing I'll tell you is we are going to go get, the toughest possible fight out there, you know. But we try to get Bradley. And like I said, he was one of the toughest guys out there. Another tough fight is Berto. We think he's a real tough fight out there. You know, so is LaDanya. So is Alexander. You know, there's so many magnitude of fights out there, so we'll work on a few different ones, you know.
I'm curious, you say that you feel that Bradley was the one that backed out of it, and obviously I wasn't privy to the negotiations, but it seemed like Oscar and Golden Boy in general was very, you know, meaning Richard Schaefer, were very public that they had something better for Robert. I think actually Oscar tweeted that they're not going to do that fight, we have something better for Robert. What is that better thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think Oscar, you know, when Oscar does his tweets, it's you know, I can't really explain some of his tweets. You know, it has nothing to do with Richard.
Right.
You know, Richard's not on Twitter. He's not the type of Twitter guy. But, I mean, look, Richard was cool with us fighting Bradley. You know, he accepted the fight. He was going to go by our terms. I mean, he wanted to do what Robert wanted to do. You know, that's why I got to give credit to Richard for that, you know. And whatever Oscar says, I mean, look, Oscar's just, you know, Oscar's, he's not day-to-day negotiations and things like that. So I mean, whatever he said or he felt at that time, I mean, that's what Oscar felt, you know. But you know, I'll tell you one thing. Robert's going to be in a really bigger fight than Tim Bradley, that's for sure, you know. And if Bradley wants to fight a guy, he beat him 11 out of 12 rounds, that's his decision. I'll tell you one thing. One guy we're not going to fight is Chalcides, who Robert beat 11 out of 12 rounds, you know.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go with him? You know, I mean, there's a lot of options around, but I mean, do you almost kind of end up as the last guy standing with Floyd Mayweather?
No. Robert's got tons of options. You know, Robert's in a big fight this year. If not this year, January, but I mean, I'm working on a few different things. You know, me and my partner Bob, you know, with Richard and trust me, there's going to be some surprises out there, and I think Robert's going to, you know, he's definitely going to come out the winner,
because I mean, we really feel like Tim Bradley should have accepted this fight, because Robert fights for the fans. He's the type, he's a, you know, he loves to fight, you know, the best fights out there, best possible fights, and it's obvious, you know, Tim Bradley doesn't, you know.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, he just fought Manny Pacquiao. And he is looking...
Well, look, when you fight Manny Pacquiao, I mean, whenever you get those types of fights, you take those opportunities. He fought Manny Pacquiao. He got the decision. He's probably the only fighter in history to beat a mega fighter in a mega fight and not get the rematch. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, he didn't look too well beating Manny Pacquiao. But, I mean, look, would you guys agree that Robert was a tougher fight than Lamont Peterson?
It's the fight that I wanted, but I find it hard to put it... the fight not happening, and again, I wasn't privy to negotiations at his feet when that company and Top Rank have their history, you know, in the Cold War that's going on. I didn't think it would happen because of that. I mean, I think I'm in the camp with you and like guys like Steve Kim and Dave that think this Cold War is the thing that's really hurting boxing more than anything. I don't blame Bob, or I don't blame, well, I kind of blame Golden Boy, but I really think that these two stables need to get together and fight. I mean, I don't understand why Don King and Bob Arum, who hated each other, could work together and these guys can't.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I understand what you're saying, but I mean, look, it's what I've said before. It's not about the promoters. It's about the fighters, you know, and about
exactly.
The guys who get in the ring and risk their lives every fight. You know, it's not about these guys who just, you know, obviously they're instrumental in getting the guys in the ring, but I mean,
they're not in the ring risking their lives every fight, you know, and the fans, who without the fans, you know, there is no boxing without the media, you know, guys like you guys who pump up the fights and get these fighters known. Everybody wanted the Tim Bradley fight. But I'll tell you one thing that if you go back and you could go look at it, I mean, everybody came on record, whether it was Robert, whether it was us, whether it was Richard, whether it was Bob, Cameron. Everybody said they were good. They were in. The only guy who didn't talk and was quiet was Bradley. He never came out and said, you know what, I'd love to fight Guerrero.
You know, he's been, but let's be fair, he's been awfully quiet since that Pacquiao fight. You know, I mean, he's really went into the cave, and he just doesn't want to come out. I mean, he's like a turtle that just stuck his neck back into the shell. I would have loved to see that. When I heard about it, I talked to Mauro Serrano, who's his Robert's publicist, and we talked about a good 15, 20 minutes about that fight. And, you know, we went back and forth about how great of a fight that would be, seeing these two guys go at it. To me, it's a very well-matched, competitive fight. It could sway either way, but
it makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. The only thing, you know, Luis, when we talk, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I agree with you on. The only thing I don't agree with you is that Timothy Bradley, this would be a tough fight. I mean, he's fought some. His roster is pretty deep. He's fought some guys, you know, and I think that's why you guys want to face him. It's because he's one of the best out there.
Yeah, there's no question. Well, we want to fight the best. One thing we want to do is we want to be able to fight guys in fights where, you know what, some people gave you a pick with Bradley, you'd pick Robert, and then you know, Kim, Steve would go another round. I mean, just we want to be in fights where guys, it's going to be 50-50 fight, where you're going to have some people saying, you know what, I could see Bradley winning, or I could see Guerrero winning. We don't want to fight guys, you know, where it's Bradley versus Peterson, where 10 out of 10 guys are going to pick Bradley. It's just not the way, you know, we operate. We want to be in these types of fights where you know, you're not sure who's going to win, you know.
I'd be honest, if it would be a 47 fight to get the belts involved, I'd be picking Robert in that fight. I got to be honest. I'm not that impressed with Bradley at 147. I don't think that his power, his skill would be the thing that Robert would have to deal with, the inside work, the body work, that I don't think his last opponent took advantage of. But Robert's got a lot of advantages in that fight. I loved the fight. I thought it was a great fight.
The only thing I would be concerned with about the fight with Robert is that Robert has been prone for cuts, and when he gets headbutt, he gets cut. You know, and he has some soft tissue on his face that with Bradley, and we've seen this numerous times in Bradley's fights, when Bradley decides to go to that body, his head comes up, clips you in the face, and Robert could be bleeding away.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I know everyone talks about Bradley's head, but, you know, I disagree with that. You know, this is boxing. This isn't ballet. This is a sport where you got to get down and dirty, you know.
This is not a me saying of discrediting Timothy Bradley. The fact is that Bradley likes to go to the body. And even if he wasn't, even if he was facing a southpaw, if it was a southpaw facing a southpaw, if the southpaw likes to go to the body, you're still going to be subjective to a headbutt. It's boxing. That's what things happen.
I think, to me, personally, I think Robert beats him. Because why? Because, you know, how's Bradley going to hurt him? He's not. And he's not going to throw more punches than him. So, you know, when it comes down to it, I think Robert just can outwork him. I think he was willing to get on the inside or the outside like he did with Adon, you know. And I think Robert's going to prove that he was an overall better fighter than Tim Bradley. And look. We feel a guy like Andre Berto is a way tougher fight than Bradley, you know. But people perceive Bradley, you know, as one of the top guys at 47. So that was the reason we wanted to fight. But I mean, look, when you look at Berto, you look at Bradley, you're talking about a guy who's got a way better right hand, much better power. He's a bigger guy, bigger naturally guy. He's a tough fight, you know. But we put it this way, Richard offered us a whole bunch of different guys, and Robert was willing to take substantially less money. When I say substantially, I mean hundreds of thousands of dollars less to fight Tim Bradley than to fight these other guys. And we told Robert, you know, I don't know if this is the best the choice. You know, Robert's like, you know what, it's not about the best choice, it's about my legacy. So I'll fight you the best. You know, it's not about the money. I've never fought for the money, and that's one thing I take my hat off to the kid, because, I mean, I've never had a fighter tell me that or do that ever.
It's something that's interesting promotionally, just switching gears to one of your other clients, to Arislandi Lara. On this night, this was another going back to the Cold War. You've got Anselmo Moreno versus Abner Morris in L.A. with Santa Cruz and Angulo. There should be a lot of Mexican folks there. And then in Nevada at the Wynn Resort, you've got Vanas versus Lara, which is a very good fight. And it's a divisional – it has divisional importance. Talk to me about that, what your thoughts are of kind of splitting focus like that. I mean, it's going to inevitably happen, but it seems to be happening more and more.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's positive and negatives. It's also good for boxing when you're able to go on, you know, the same night and be able to fill up arenas like they did the last time and have a lot of people watch it. But, I mean, when you look at Laura Vanas, I think it's two of the top guys at 54, if not two of the best, most avoided guys at 54. And I think it's a hell of a fight. I think a lot of people underestimate Vanas, and they think Laura's just going to walk over him, you know. And you got to respect a guy like him just for taking the fight because, look, nobody wanted to fight Laura. And that, I know you guys are not in negotiations, but I am, and nobody wanted to fight Laura. When I mean nobody, I mean Austin Trout, Cotto, Bundridge. I mean, you go across the whole board, Angulo, whoever you want to mention at 54 wasn't willing to fight Laura, and this guy was. So we're preparing hard for him, and I'll tell you one thing. We're going to put a beating on him November 10th.
I'm actually probably picking him by knockout. And the thing, you know, going to what you're saying about him, nobody wanting to fight him, is one thing before, Laura was showing that he was a bit of a cutie, he had skills, and he had that amateur career. You're like, that's not somebody I want to mess with. Now that he's flashing explosive power and really starting to understand who he is in the ring, real scary. He's a real problem at 154. And like I said, I expect him to win by knockout.
But, yeah, there's no question about it. You know, he's definitely sitting on it. We give credit. You know, there's credit to Ronnie Shields. I mean, I think the bigger credit goes to Edward Jackson, you know, Jack. You know, who works with Laura, he works with Andre Ward, and he, you know, he's I can't even explain, you know. I can't even explain, you know, what a help he's been to our team, you know. So I mean, look, I think Laura's a dangerous guy, and I think there's no question he's the most feared fighter on the whole planet.
Is there going to be more press for this, do you think? More of a promotional push than there's been so far? I mean, I think with Vanas kind of pulling out of things and us not being quite sure of him as fight fans, there was almost a sense, I think, that the fight might not happen. But certainly now it's happening. Do you guys plan to kind of push it more and get it out there? Because it feels like a forgotten fight, and it's a very, very good fight.
You know, that was one thing I was talking to Mario about last night. He's going to start his press releases up on Laura and things like that. But, I mean, the reason it really hasn't been out there too much is I think both these guys know how important this fight is. And interviews are not important to guys like this because they know they got to win this fight, especially like Laura, you know. This guy's lit a fire under his ass, you know. I've never seen him like this, you know. I've never seen him this serious, you know, this angry in camp, you know, beating on guys in camp. And, you know, he's not playing around, you know, and Vanas Matarossian, when he gets on November 10th, he better not be laughing and trying to shake hands because Laura's not going to want to laugh with him. He's going to want to go in there and, you know, put a beating on him. And come November 10th, he's going to put a beating on him. I think there's no question about it. Well, this guy's going to get not only, you know, thoroughly beat. I mean, I'll be shocked if he goes to decision, and I wouldn't be shocked if he quits on the stool. You know, I think it's going to be that type of
fight. Wow. You think it's going to be? Yeah, I think it's going to be brutal. And the thing is, you know, Vanas is kind of straight up and down. He's a skilled fighter. He's got good feet. He's aggressive. I've watched him, you know, spar quite a bit. I've seen, you know, a ton of his fights. But there's something about Lara that he's a slicker guy. I don't see Vanas' upper body moving that much and it being kind of stationary.
No, he's pretty stationary. He's a stationary kind of guy, you know. So
I see a Paul Williams, Sergio Martinez 2 kind of situation. I mean, maybe not out cold like that, but he's going to get whacked upside the head quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we feel that way. We're looking at tapes. I mean, obviously, we don't want to talk about it too much of it now, and you guys will see more of it on November 10th. But one thing I will tell you is, you know, Lara's not going to want to go backwards. He's not going to want to take a step backwards. And the way Vanas is talking, he's not going to want to take a step backwards. I mean, I know you said you've seen a lot of his sparring. When you got 18-ounce gloves or 16-ounce gloves with headgear, you tend to have a little bit bigger balls and bigger heart. When you get hit with those 10 ounces on top of your head, you know, especially on that big nose of his, Laura's going to put a beating on him. You know?
Inflatable samurai fat guy suits, and I'm unstoppable, you know.
Yeah, exactly, you know. So, I mean, it's just, we'll see what he's got. He's been doing a lot of talking. When you talk the way he's been talking, then you got a lot to back up, you know. So we love it. We love it, and we expect him to try to go out there and fight the way he doesn't fight because he's not a fighter. He's a guy that likes to move backwards, and, you know, he's got pretty decent boxing skills. He's got quick feet for a taller guy, but you know, he's not the type most aggressive guy. He's not, you know, the guy with the killer instinct. You know, he's not doesn't fight like Alfredo Angulo, for instance, you know. So I mean, the way he's talking, he better come fight like Alfredo Angulo, because if not, you know, he's going to get destroyed.
Well, Twitter's a whole different world than the ring, you know. And I think that's always been Vanas's kind of his MO a little bit.
Right.
What he does in the gym doesn't quite translate into the ring for some reason. I remember watching him, Chavez Jr., that sparring session, getting ready for Zibic, and it was the open media day. I couldn't tell whose open media day it was because Vanas was just lighting his ass up. And then come the fights, and, you know, Vanas is the one getting dropped by Saul Roman. He goes, gets up to knock him out, but he made him look like a world beater. You know, and the Chavez Jr. wins the middleweight title. You just never know from sparring.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the – give credit to Vanas, too. He did get, like you said, he got dropped. He got up. He got dropped to Uma. He got up. So, I mean, the kid showed – you know, his willingness to at least get up and fight through tough times. So we are expecting a tough fight out of him. But, I mean, it's just I think Lara's on a different class, not only with him, but with every single fighter at 54. But if you look at the landscape, I think he's a tougher fight than Trout. Trout's got no power. He's got no heart. Or ran him out of the ring. And Cotto's, I mean, if you see Cotto in person, I mean, he's like, you feel like you're standing next to a midget. I mean, he's like 5'5", you know, so I think for Lara, I mean, it would have been real easy. You know, Bunridge is wide open with everything, you know, but he is a dangerous guy because he's wild swinging. And Gudel's got some big balls, so he's always in the fight, you know, and Kirkland's good power. So, I mean, it's a stacked division. It's wide open. I think the winner of this fight, you know, which is going to be Lara, they're going to be in a great position. And then, like, Jose Suleiman came out and said that the winner's got to fight Canelo next year in the first defense. And we expect that the WC to stand by the word, you know.
I don't, but we'll see. Last thing, and people on Twitter are kind of asking. I mean, I hope they do, dude. You know, I hope the WBC doesn't do you guys wrong. I just, you know, I expect to win, you know, the lottery, you know, this weekend more than I expect them to do the right thing. For Robert, what do you think of, like, Maidana or Matisse, somebody like that, and that's within their own promotional stable? Is that something that's real? Even though they're 140, you know, Maidana's, I guess, 147 now. Where do you go with him if you don't get the Bradley thing? I mean, you guys are, in a sense, the last guy standing for Floyd. What do you feel?
You know, all those fights are there. You know, Maidana is a tough guy. I think Maltese has shown fight by fight that he's one of the more underrated guys. You know, even if it's at 40, 47, it doesn't matter. Like I said, Alexander, there's Berto. I mean, look, put it this way. The next fight Robert fights, it will be a de facto type fight where it's either going to Mayweather and say, you know, I have to fight this guy or just go to another direction. But I think Robert's going to be in a huge fight. Well, I know Robert's going to be in a huge fight, you know, and the fans are going to be happy with him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I honestly don't want to see Peterson too, you know. Dave, I mean, are you even feeling that fight at all?
No, I don't. I honestly think that Peterson has his own unfinished business out there for him to deal with. I like to see him move forward. I go back with the whole Guerrero and Bradley thing. I think that makes a lot of sense why they stepped over it. Only the Bradley camp are going to know about it. I don't know. Maybe I'll make a call after this and find out. We'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can do a little bit more research. I mean, look, HBO was brokered the deal between Golden Boy and Top Rank. So, I mean, it wasn't like they were dealing direct and, you know, yelling at each other like, you know, most people think and, you know,
yeah,
big egos. It wasn't that way at all, you know?
No, I looked into – I mean, when I say I'm not privy to negotiations, I just mean I wasn't there. But no, I've talked to some people, and it's just frustrating is really the bottom line.
Yeah, what was really frustrating about it was look, everybody was on board. Like I said, I named all the parties. Only people that didn't come out was Bradley. Then you got this, you know, this Diaz guy who's the fall guy. You know, he comes out and says, Robert's not a good fighter. Robert this, Robert that. It'll be taking a step backwards. And then they go ahead and take, you know, first by fighting Peterson. That they beat 11 out of 12 rounds with a knockdown. I mean, it's who wants to watch that, you know? Who wants to watch that? It's like the Patriots versus the Browns. Who wants to watch that? Everyone knows the Patriots are going to win.
I was there, and it was a competitive, one-sided fight, but not one that And seeing that, you know, Peterson, where he's at, me personally, I'd kind of like to see him serve a drug suspension before he fights again. That's just me, you know, considering he broke the rules and admitted it.
I could understand where you're coming from. Right, look, I don't want to take away from Peterson because he's not a bad fighter himself, but at 40 pounds, I mean, look, he was hitting Amir Khan with everything, and he wasn't be able to even put Amir Khan on the deck. You know, I see that Amir Khan, whoever hits him, hurts him, and this guy wasn't hurting him much, you know, so to move up now to 47 and think that power is going to go up with you, you know, and fight a guy that already beat you, I mean, I just, and coming off a layoff plus tested positive, I mean, I don't see why anyone would pick Peterson, why anyone would want to watch that, you know?
I agree. Well, Louis, the Cubist Report is fun and informative. I look forward to your guys' fights, and we'll catch you next time, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. Thank you all, and you know, hopefully next week I'll be back on. We'll be discussing Robert's fight. You know, hopefully we're able to close out and make a deal. You know, to satisfy you guys, the media, and the fans. You know, we want to thank you guys a lot for being on Robert's side. You know.
Yeah, that's the thing. We just want to see him fight. Just knock somebody out. Let's see it.
he's gonna be in the ring, and he's gonna be putting a beating on someone. You know, like I said, very soon. So everyone, stay tuned, and I'll be back on next week. You know, if you guys permit it, and then we'll be talking about it.
Sweet, I appreciate it.
All right, you guys have a great night.
You too.
All right, buddy.
I'll catch up with you.
All right.
I'm not sure if I lost Dave or not. I think he's.
No, I don't know how I did it. I ended up putting myself on mute by accident.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, it's so quiet. Louis was like, I don't think Dave likes me anymore.
Yeah.
True. Well, we've gotten into that habit. Now I'm like addicted to the mute button. You know, like after we did that whole live show and the first time with my new headphones.
Right.
Just like yours, it's like mute. Yeah, I've done it a few times. Start talking and like, damn it, why aren't they listening to me? And you look down and you see the flashing red light that says mute. Oh.
I end up just hitting it by accident, I think. It's interesting when you get to hear the other side of the story of what goes on in negotiations, you know. And, like I just mentioned, Timothy Bradley's just been really, really, okay, let's. All right, we're back here on Leaving the Ring. Something happened. I don't know. It said timeout. So it gave us a timeout, I guess, through the whole conversation. See what the DeCoupas did here to us on Leaving the Ring. Carlos, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, man? Hey, thanks for joining us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. Got a big fight coming up for you, Amir King Kong. Getting that call, man. What was your thoughts when you hear that you're going to have a chance to go with the guys that are considered a mega star in the sport?
Oh, man, it was the best thing in the world so far, man. You know, when I got the call from my manager, Frank, and, you know, he told me, hey, you know, you got the fight. You know, I got told, man, I want to give you a big hug right now. I was like, man, I was just excited, man.
You know, it seems to me that, first off, you know, congratulations, man. I mean, this is a big opportunity for yourself, you know. Obviously, we saw the change for Danny Garcia and made him a major player. Knowing the understanding of what this can do for your career and for your life and the change for your family and everybody around you, surrounding you, does the pressure, does it add a little bit more, or has the doubt been set in yet?
You know what? As far as pressure, you know, I feel no pressure at all. I just know that this is my time. You know, it's my time to shine. I got the biggest opportunity of my life right now, and I'm going to take full advantage of it, man. I'm just, you know, bust my ass in the gym, train as hard as I possibly can, and come fight night, you know. I'm going to take it to Amir Khan, man. And a lot of people don't believe it, but I'm going to come out victorious, man. No matter if I knock him out or a decision, doesn't matter, but I'm going to come out victorious.
There you go.
Hey, Carlos, how you doing? It's Gabriel Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Ben, congratulations. As Dave said, it's, you know, everybody's kind of waits for that moment in your whole career where you get that special fight, right fight at the right time. And, you know, honestly, you know, it's not taking anything away from your opponent, but you couldn't be getting him at a better time. He's heading into a transition with a new trainer. He just got stopped by Danny Garcia. You kind of see some of his weaknesses. When you look at it, though, when you approach it from a mental standpoint, do you have to look at it like you're about to face the best Amir Khan that no one's ever seen? Or do you go, man, I've really got a chance to knock this guy out again and really get to that next level? How do you look at it?
You know, I'm gonna look at it as, you know, it's gonna be the best Amir Khan, you know, that's ever fought. You know, I'm not looking at it any other way. You know, whatever happens in that ring, if he gets dropped again, then, you know, I'll be more than happy. But I'm gonna go in there, and, you know, I'm just gonna put in work on him.
Do you think? I mean, you the one disadvantage that you have. I mean, there's a couple. Chad, I mean, one, he's a 140 pounder. Kind of moving to 147 very soon. He talks about that a lot. And you're moving up. In my opinion, he keeps kind of postponing his move to 47 because of his losses. I think he was going to do it if he had beaten Peterson. Then he loses. He sticks around. He gets knocked out. Do you think he's compromising himself at 147, making the weight, and that's part of why he has so much trouble recovering?
You know what, it might be, but, you know, that's all to my benefit. So, you know, if he has trouble making that 140 pounds, then, you know, that's better for me. So, I'll like I said, I'm just going to go in there and do my work and come out with a W and become the new star.
You know, I mean, even with this knockout with Danny Garcia, he was knocked out previously, you know, prior to that against Prentice Prescott, who have been both big punchers. You know, Garcia has been known for having really good power, decent power at 147 here. Now, my thought is that I thought he was giving Danny a really good run for his money. You know, but it was a fight that we felt, a lot of us felt, myself really, I felt that it was really a moment for him to grow up in the ring, find out what kind of a transition from a boy to a man for yourself. You know, getting this chance, this exposure, do you think this is your chance of leaving the boyhood and walking into the manhood to find out exactly where do you stand in the category and of your division?
Oh, definitely. You know, that this fight, you know, it's no more. You know, it's all. You know, this is a world class fighter. You know, this guy's known all around the world. So definitely, you know, this is going to be one of those fights where you know, it's you know, it's going to be the, you know, man versus man, and the winner, you know, I think it's going to be a tremendous fight because, you know, he does have a lot of heart. He has a lot of heart, and so do I. So I think we're both going to clash, and it's going to be a war.
What do you think you're going to have to rely on the most here? You know, I mean, when we think of boxing and we think about fighters that stay successful, it's with footwork, you know, and some will rely on chin. In this matchup, because the fact that even though he was knocked out, he still carries the speed. He still carries very well power, you know. But his combinations have kind of lacked, you know, and the way he pulls out, he likes to pull straight out, his chin up. He leaves himself there. Yeah. Or sometimes what he does, he likes to stay in that pocket a little bit too long and kind of admire his work, you know. But for yourself, what do you think that you have to rely on? Do you have to rely on footwork, or do you have to rely on how well you can take a punch?
I can take a punch, you know. I'm just gonna rely on the main thing I'm relying on is my conditioning. You know, I'm gonna go in there and you know, of course I'm gonna use that footwork, so, you know, keep my distance because he does have a good jab, and you know, just move in there and you know, just stay on him from the time that first bell rings to the last round. You know, stay on him and just keep pounding away.
I like that answer. Good answer right there.
I think, too, at the same time, you know, because let's be honest, this is going to be probably the fastest and highest pedigree guy that you've faced.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I imagine for you, you've got to think there's a certain amount of sacrifice that you're going to have to make. Not you know, getting to the ring, the normal sacrifices, but that you're going to have to go through some jabs and through some speed and some 1-2s in order to get in there and do the work that you got to do. You're going to have to be a little bit of the bully. Would you agree? Or do you think you have to be the smaller guy and make him kind of reach for you and try to chase you down? I mean, are there multiple approaches here?
Yeah, definitely there's multiple approaches. You know, it's we're going to go in there with, you know, different game plans. If one doesn't work, we're going to jump on the other one. But, you know, definitely, like I said, that this is my coming out party. You know, I probably am going to take a couple jabs, you know, but that's when people are going to realize, like, man, this Carlos Molina could fight, you know. You know, this guy's badass, and that's what I'm out there to prove.
When this fight was announced, I don't know about yourself, Gabriel, I actually really liked the fight. I was like, you know what, this is what boxing – this is what was lacking 2 years ago, and even a year ago, you know, where you saw contenders back in the 70s and 80s and even in the mid-90s, contenders. I mean, I'm talking about guys that have been in the grind, putting in the work, get the opportunity of getting that torch passed to them. For a moment, we stayed stagnant. We saw guys just really not getting that opportunity. We're starting to see that a little bit more. We're seeing, Mauricio Herrera. We just saw Josecito Lopez. Now we're seeing a Carl Molina. I like this fight. I think this is a great, great move and a great way of keeping boxing at that flow of where we remember and where it should be at.
How do you feel about your weight with this? You know, I know you've had some issues with it, you know, getting down to the lower weights. Now that you get to gain this weight, do you think it's going to – is that something you're going to just take full advantage of and enjoy? Or you're gonna go, you know, are you gonna play in between it and just kind of fight for your optimum weight? How do you approach that? Because that's all new.
Yeah, you know, it's I think it's gonna help me out. You know, it's never easy to make 135, but you know, with the fight being at 140 now, I get to put on a little more muscle. So I think it's gonna play off to my benefit. I think you know, I'll probably be. You know, put on a little muscle, I'll be a little stronger, a little faster. So I think it's gonna benefit me.
I can't wait for this fight. I'm excited, man. It's
yeah, you and I both, man.
I bet, man. I mean, what has it done for you? What's different this time around since getting something like this?
So I got a lot of followers on Twitter.
That's
good. Yeah, actually the first day I found out, the next day I woke up, you know, to do my early morning workout, and I checked my phone. My phone's going crazy. Like, man, what the hell's going on? And I look and I said he was gonna fight me. So I was like, oh man, that's when it hit me. Like, wow, it's on.
That's what's up. Hey, so. Has your camp came up with any names yet of who you guys are going to be using to try to mimic, you know, somewhat of what Khan does in the ring, speed-wise, combination-wise, and even strength-wise?
Yeah, there's a couple names out there that my trainer, Clemente, he's been looking at. There's a few guys. I know one of the guys is actually he's actually going to fight this month, and he actually told that after his fight he would help us. World champion Miguel Vasquez. So, you know, I think he's going to help me out because he's a tall guy, likes to move around a lot. So, I think he'd be great help. And you know, we'll bring in some other guys, and you know, we're going to have a good camp.
That's the thing. I mean, you're looking for speed, I imagine. You're looking for technical guys. You can't just get in there with like standard Mexican, you know, sparring partners. They just want to bang it out. This is a very specific style, right? I mean, have you faced anybody that's similar?
You know what? I haven't really faced, you know, somebody that has a, you know, like real good footwork, like Amir Khan with the jab, and you know, like moves around and uses a lot of angles the way he does. But you know, we already started training since like 2 weeks ago, man. So we're going to be more than ready for this fight, and you know, I just can't wait.
This is one thing I'm curious about. It's kind of my last question. I know Dave has more. I don't know if you saw it today. You know, we're always all on Twitter. I caught the video of him at Sky Sports doing their show, and him and Kell Brook are going back and forth. And Khan does one of his classic, like he did with the 140s before, and said, well, I'll fight the winner of Bradley and Peterson, or he named out, like, you guys fight these guys, and I'll fight the winner of that, always kind of placing himself in the king role. But he's got the little matter of fighting you. What do you think about that? He's still kind of talking like he is where he used to be before he got knocked out for the second time. Is that
He can talk. I mean, all those guys that he wants to fight is at 147, and obviously when he fights me at 140, it's probably gonna be his last fight that he wants to fight at 140. If he's gonna get another, you know, he's gonna take another loss. So I'd say just move your career to 147 or retire, man.
How do you think you have to deal with the grappling that sometimes that Amir does? You know, there's some dirty tactics there that obviously have been pointed out in the past. What do you do? How do you mentally and physically prepare yourself for something like that?
You know what? This is part of the game. You know, there's a lot of guys that are smart that actually help me out with that. They get you in there, and the main thing is just don't get frustrated. Work through it, and you know, do some grappling on my own if I have to.
There you go, man. Well, hey, Carlos, thanks for calling in and allowing us to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. We appreciate it, and good luck, man. Best of luck to you in December.
Oh, thank you guys. You know, and anytime you guys want me in here, man, I'm more than happy to talk to you guys, man. It's always a good time.
Absolutely, brother.
I really appreciate it, man. So happy for you to get the fight, man, and good luck to you.
Oh, thank you.
You have a good night, man.
All right.
You too.
There you go, Carlos Molina facing in December 15th against Amir Khan. Like I said before, it's always a good thing to see contenders that really put in the work, that get in there and they work on their craft and they get the opportunity of a dream. You know, the opportunity of a lifetime, realistically, to get that shot, to change their life around, to see whether or not if they have the goods to compete with the elite. And even with the loss of Amir Khan against Danny Garcia, I still think this is a very tough fight for him, a very big, it's a massive test. I mean, it could go two ways. Either Molina rises to the occasion and he shows what goods he does carry in the division, or Amir Khan shakes it off, does what he normally does, and continues on with his career, trying to move forward and redeem himself. Because obviously, this is the road to redeem. This is the road for glory for Molina.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I like these kind of matchups. I mean, I think it was a bit of a misstep for Del Valle. You know, he's got the hell beat out of him. But, you know, seeing this kind of fight, I mean, Molina is a guy that's come up in tough gyms. You know, he's been around the block a little bit, and he's this well-schooled guy. You know, he's a little bit of a tweener. He's not quite – he's a bit too big for 135. He has trouble getting there. Not quite – we'll find out if he's a 140, what he's like. You know, he's going to be a little rejuvenated, a little stronger, like you said, at the weight. Anytime you don't have to lose 5 pounds, that's probably a good thing, you know, for a fighter.
Right.
So I'm very curious. He's getting Khan. I mean, there's Khan once again. And I respect Khan's bravado and his self-confidence. So I remember I running into him after he got knocked out by Brady Prescott in less than a minute. And that's when I first met him, and he came into Wild Card, and he was training like that first day. And the last thing I asked him was, like, do you want a rematch? You know? And he looked at me and was really passionate about it, that, yeah, absolutely I do. And I believed him. You know, he never did get that rematch, but that's probably more about Brady's career than anything. But here again, we have him kind of acting, you know, just totally confident and calling shots and acting like nothing ever happened.
Right.
And I wonder if that's a way in for Carlos Molina. That, and also, he's going after a guy that doesn't have a lot of knockouts. But Glenn Johnson wasn't known for being a knockout artist either when he stopped Roy Jones after his stunning knockout loss. So we're going to see, are they bringing Khan back a little too soon? Do you think he should take the rest of the year off and let his brain kind of relax? It's an interesting fight. I think people are going crazy because they're moving up Molina from lightweight, but I like the fight.
Hmm. I'm going to try a bit to see if we can get him one more time, see if this number works. Here, no, it didn't work. My bad.
All right. Well, we tried. I know they sent me the exact same number, like, over again. I'm like, that number's not working. So, don't know what to tell you. I was trying to get him before he left for Australia, but he went right back to Sydney pretty fast. So
right.
What are you going to do, you know? And we don't really pre-record the way we used to. And I, honestly, I prefer the live experience much more to doing the and let's cut away to a you know pre-recorded interview. I'll tell you what, I guess I could talk about it now because I saw Angulo tweet it, what Jimmy's working at here in Los Angeles. He's working at the Westside Boxing Club. I had a chance to go visit and watch him spar. Brandon Gonzalez was there. Fernando Guerrero was there. I'm not going to get into detail about what I saw in the session. You know, it's his second session that I saw, like since he's been out like 10 months. He's working himself back into shape. Apparently, the very next session that was probably his best. I don't know how things went today, but it was interesting watching them all work together and like Hunter kind of explaining exactly how he put this whole stable together. It wasn't just collecting a bunch of guys, but making sure that each one of them kind of fit together in a puzzle. You know, each one complements each other, and that Khan actually adds a whole other aspect that he was looking for within the stable. And Angulo is a very, very important piece as he's like, a pressure fighter, and that style was there. It's a cool little stable. I'm writing a story about it for Boxing News that should be out. I don't know when they're going to put it out, but it should be done in about 2 days.
I'm really interested in what Virgil does with them. This is a really different type of style for Virgil Hunter. You know, he's pretty much had more technical fighters in there, you know, from Ward and Brandon Gonzalez. And even, I wouldn't call Mayfield more technical, but he's definitely, more patient and more on the outside, where Angulo is more of a guy in your face type of style, real Mexican tradition here. So it's interesting to see what Hunter can do with him, you know, in terms of footwork and in terms of using and utilizing that power and combinations in a different manner, in a different way, in a more strategic style that hopefully we'll get to see out of him. I don't know if we're going to see it right away. Normally you don't. You'll see it maybe two or three fights down the line. But I think this is a really big – for me, this is a big assignment for Virgil Hunter.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's one of the things he talked about with me was that he said, I love a challenge, you know, and I want a challenge. And Angulo is a challenge to take a guy. Well, I like what Virgil, why they work together is that Angulo was looking for something that was out of the norm. He doesn't want to fight a bunch of the same type of sparring partners and just go in there and bang it out with each other and let's show who's the toughest guy. I think one of the biggest things he's going to have to unlearn is that it's not okay to get hit. That's what, you know, one of the things Hunter talked about, you know, that it's actually not okay, like at any time, to take flush punches. Like, it just isn't. And to get him out of that kind of machismo and to kind of think more. But I've always felt there's much more intelligence in Alfredo. Like he said, I want to learn more than what I have. And you know, he wants to keep growing as a fighter. Nobody wants to plateau and just stay the same. Who wants to do that? You know, it's hard to go to the gym when it's like that. And so, you know, basically it's two guys kind of looking – wanting to look at the game from a different perspective, but bring their perspective to it. I think it's an interesting marriage. We'll see. I think it'll take several fights, 2-3 fights, for Angulo not to get hit and then just go right to war, but to be more crafty about his approach. It's going to be cool. And watching Amir Khan kind of figure it out, you know. The thing about Hunter, and I think he said this on this show, is that he doesn't have a particular system. He has a bunch of tools and all different manner of tricks to teach you, but he lets the fighter teach him how to train him,
right?
By observing, and so that's a lot of what it was interesting watching Hunter kind of discovering Angulo.
And with Hunter, I mean, I think Alfredo Angulo is going to find himself a lot in this experience of training of what Virgil Hunter does, you know, let alone getting some different type of sparring in front of him. But with, getting blood drawn from him, more science into his eating habits and more science into his training habits and stuff. I think it's a great move, but could it be far too late for Angulo to change a little bit? I don't know. I'm my thought is, even though he's with Nacho Bernstein, and Nacho's another great trainer and stuff, My thought was that you have to stay with a trainer long enough. I know the loss was a big thing here and stuff, but you got to stay, and also the, you know, false imprisonment and stuff, but you got to stay with a trainer long enough to really see the effects. And those effects may not come in like you're hoping. Your body may not adjust to it, may not adapt to it, you know. I'm just hoping that we're going to see some subtle changes out of Angulo, because I think subtle changes will be major changes coming fight nights.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's going to be the thing. And also to see if his body can be brought back. You know, it's going to take time. He's been out for 10 months. And even before that, you know, I think, you know, for the, particularly for the Kirkland fight, you know, he really kind of trained himself. I mean, I think even for the fight, you know, his comeback fight in Mexicali, you know, he got himself in shape. He had Nacho around, but I mean, it was really him kind of rejuvenating himself and keeping himself in shape. And particularly when with the Kirkland fight, I mean, he was, from what people say, I'm kind of treading lightly. I'm not, I know what I'm going to say. I'm just trying to figure out how to say it.
Right. Right words out there.
I'll just say it, and I'm going to just deal with the consequences. And if they get mad at me for saying it, well, the line forms on the left. From how Angulo's camp feels, his former trainer, Clemente Medina, basically kind of abandoned him. And so he was kind of stuck trying to figure out how to proceed for that Kirkland fight. And as much as Nacho was in the corner, Nacho was getting him Juan Manuel Marquez ready for Pacquiao. You got to think that his focus was not fully there. And I don't want to take anything away from Kirkland in that fight, but people that say that Angulo's shot or he's done or that, you know, that fight proved he was never really good at all, I don't think they've seen quite the best of him. I'd like to see him with three fights with Daryl Hudson, who's really the guy in charge of bringing his body back, and three fights with Virgil Hunter, and see how this marriage works. And then we'll really know. I don't think they should step him up too fast.
Well, you know? He is with Golden Boy, and, you know, obviously, realistically, the game plan in a perfect world would allow the guy to grow and find, you know, his rhythm with this new trainer, Virgil Hunter. But I go back to it again, you know, this is Golden Boy, and they do have a golden goose right now by the name of, Saúl Canelo Álvarez. So he may be ready to be cooked and served for Thanksgiving. They're just maybe allowing him to have that one fight in to serve him to Canelo. That really is my thought of what the intentions are for Angulo in the promotional banner. Hopefully, though, the team of Angulo and the trainer, the new trainer, who's a very vocal guy and a guy that understands matching, understands how to give direction to his fighter, to get him the right matches, to build him. He was criticized heavily when he had Andre Ward coming out of the Olympics. You know, I mean, they took their time. They took their time to climb up the mountain. You know, you got that old saying, you know, it's better to climb the mountain, because when you're on top and you fall off, you won't know how to climb back up. They obviously took the long road up. They didn't take the shortcut. I like to see the long road for Angulo, even though his style does spell short term.
That's, you know, speaking of short term styles that'll always be remembered. And we're just kind of free-flowing it tonight because we lost a guest, and so that adds time. But what you said, you know, makes me think of – and everybody kind of denigrates a guy like Angulo. Ah, he's not that good. You know, it's like, yeah, but are you entertained? I'm always entertained.
Right.
And the question of the week, you know, has been – I really liked – you know, I liked Lee Groves' piece. Other people have been writing about it and asking the questions. Lee makes a case against. But – Arturo Gatti and his Hall of Fame viability this year. What do you think? Is Arturo Gatti a Hall of Famer to you?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Fight fans out there, you want to come on and give your opinion about that. 347-215-7598. Hall of Famer. I guess in terms of pure entertainment, all balls out and guts, getting himself off the canvas and turning the fight around, if that was the main ballot to enter the Hall of Fame, absolutely. Absolutely. But to look at his resume of fights, to look at the resume of names that he has failed up against, if that was the criteria to get into the Hall of Fame, then the answer is absolutely not. It's by choice of what people think. I think that's the way boxing has always been kind of formed into, is more by justifying things by choice, not by logic. It, for some reason, just like the sport, the mind frame in business is almost similar, you know, where the sport where you get two guys matches up, logic tells you that this guy should win because he has so many wins and he has so much experience. But just like that, it could change with one punch or one off night. When it comes to the boxing business or the decisions or inductees, it's almost kind of like that, Gabriel. I don't know. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but it's almost...
Well, the Groves, you know, this is a piece, it's called, is Arturo Gatti, is he a Hall of Famer? I think it's a lot of what Groves argues. I mean, he really goes through his history. I would consider a historian. He used to write for Max Boxing. I'm not sure which venue exactly he writes for now, but this is on Ring, their website. And it's a really great line at the end. He says, Gotti's elevation will be a product of heart over head, which,
right,
given the way Gotti fought, would be fitting. And to me, I guess the question for me is what did he leave you with? You know, everybody talks about the Hall of Fame, like it should only be the guys that didn't get punched that often or defensive masters, or there were multi-division champions maybe, or champions for a long time. For me, the Hall of Fame should be a collection of the most special fighters. And to say that he was special, and he was special. I'm sorry. Not everybody's gifting people miss and making them pay. Not everybody's gift is your athleticism or speed, the ability to sustain punishment, get knocked down, get up, and knock the other guy out of nowhere, shifting momentum like that. To endure the ninth round body shot against Mickey Ward and to come and keep fighting all three of those fights. I mean, sometimes all you have is a moment of greatness. Buster Douglas. A moment of greatness. Diego Corrales, Cristiano Corrales won. They should be in the Hall of Fame just for that fight alone. I don't know what other criteria people have. I mean, if you want to look at it historically, sure, there might be better candidates. You know, and he names off a few. You know, Wilfredo Vasquez Sr., Virgil Hill, Darius Mikulchesky. Those are names people would know. Nassim Hamed's out there. I got Ian over Nassim Hamed personally. He names off several other names. And I just, for me, I remember where I was for the Gotti trilogy. I know who I watched those fights with. Those are special fights. And his fight with Wilson, where we were first introduced to him. I don't understand why you wouldn't think that Arturo Gotti's not a Hall of Famer. You know, why would you think that? Of course he is. That's how I feel. But it is a total heart.
But it goes back to choice. You know what I mean? I mean, what we don't really have. There's never. I don't believe there's a standard of what meets that criteria of what is a Hall of Famer and what it should be. You know what they have to meet to get into there. You know, I would question no doubt. I mean, when you think of a gutsy warrior, a guy that has faced obstacles and was able to jump over them. Arturo Gatti is one of those guys. You know, he's memorable. You know what I mean? Where you've seen crafty guys, and guess what? They kind of fall back into the back of that line of other fighters. You know, when somebody mentions them, you're like, oh yeah, he was a good fighter. But when you think about guys like Arturo Gatti and you know, like a Michael Carbajal, you know, guys like that, they really stick to the brain.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, Carbajal's another guy, you know. I think he's, you know, arguably, probably more accomplished along the lines of what a Hall of Fame voter is thinking. But it's moments, you know, that you think of a guy. I don't know. He would have, if I was still in the Boxing Writers Association, which I'm not, I would have given Gotti my vote. I just would have. Think he is, to me, like what I tweeted today, he symbolizes what is good about a night at the fights. What you want out of a night at the fights. You want all action, somebody to get knocked out. Sometimes it was you know, Gotti on the losing end. A lot of times, most times, it was him on the winning.
You know what's funny is, like, if you just think about this right now, how many fighters do you know that you care less whether he wins or not, and you would pay to go see him regardless?
Regardless. The only time I didn't want to see Arturo Gatti was towards the end. And I was kind of like, all right, guys, you know, I didn't like watching him end like that. But at the same time, when you're a boxing fan, you know, you can't be a bitch about it. You know, the end game is kind of part of the process. And it's kind of one of the things that I tell fighters, and it doesn't always work out this way, but that I hope to cover you as long as I can, like through the whole process. And part of that process is going to be the losing process or the downs process. It's just inevitable. You can't really ignore it. So we had to go through it with Gotti, you know, just like we had to go through it with all the fighters. Pacquiao's inevitable decline. But Gotti, man, he just, for me, it was just, if Gotti on, you know, I think he might hold, doesn't he hold the record for HBO fights? He's had a lot of HBO
appearances. He's had a lot of appearances.
I want to say, like, you know, is it 20? I mean, it could be more. I'm not sure. It was a large number. It was like a bigger number than I have to ask HBO.com on Twitter. How many fights did Gotti have? But
that's another thing. I mean, to question him to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, putting him on a premium network and the amount. And like I said, win or lose, HBO put him on for one sole reason. He was pure entertainment.
Yeah. That's the bottom line, you know.
And we've had a lot of great fighters like that, you know, that were just, you know, from, you can think of like Jake LaMotta, pure entertainment, all the way down, like I said, you know, from Michael Carbajal, just pure entertainment. Guys that went in there and they just, they went for it, you know. There was no backward step. Diego Corrales was another great, great fighter that went in there. Jose Luis Castillo, you know, at the time when he was, you know, reigning and moving up and get it, trying to get his name out there. Pure entertainment, you know. Guys that just come in and they put in the work. They want to fight. But as the echelon of pure entertainment, Arturo Gatti was one of them. The guy, the Warriors, the gods of Warriors just shined on the dude.
Yeah, it was always fun. That's, to me, Hall of Fame, you know. Like, I don't know if some people think that's absolutely crazy to even put Buster Douglas in the Hall of Fame based on one night. But I guarantee you, like I said tonight, I have no idea where the hell I was the night of Mayweather-Baldemir. Couldn't tell you. I don't believe I watched the fight live.
You know, I did watch the fight live. I got to be honest with you. I did watch the fight live, but I knew that it was going to go a certain way. But let me be honest here. I mostly listened to it live. I was out doing stuff, working on things in the backyard, doing some daily chores that I had to get around to in the evening. But I'm you know what? I'm a fight fan. I'm a hardcore fight fan. And just like the baseball players and the baseball player fans and the football player fans, they tune on to ESPN just to solely listen to what's happening out there. They don't necessarily sit down and watch all the news, but they listen to what's happening out there. And that's what I did, you know, because at the time there was no boxing radio shows. There was no outlet for us to get our feet on. So, and the only way we got our feet and got news and et cetera was either get magazines or just tune into the fights so you can hear about the upcoming fights or you can hear about what's going on. And it just, that's the way I fed my habit.
Yeah, that's true. Gotti was it was a regular diet of Gotti growing up, you know. To me, it's all about. Like, I think the only thing I really regret is I'm not going to be able to vote for Trinidad as a Hall of Famer. That was a vote
that's a no brainer though. I mean, if anybody was questioning that, I mean, come on.
Oh no, but I mean, I just wanted to, as a Trinidad fan, and he's a person that that made me love this sport. I wanted to give him my vote, you know.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I could see the argument where Arturo Gatti, you know, like I said, you look at the resume and the names that, you know, when it comes to fighting top elite, he wasn't successful. So yeah, there's a window of argument there. But
he lost to Angel Manfredi and Ivan Robbins. You know, but still, it's the moments that you remember. You know, it's the guys that he did beat, and how he beat him. That's the way, you know, that's why I go, well, you know.
Well,
but then,
you wave it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
like I said, it goes back to choice. You know, it's choice. You know, we're not following a standard of expectations that we're looking for. It's really by choice. You look at it and go, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you can have a mere debate about it and then go from there and stuff. But
it's, yeah, it's like, you know, for those fights, it's like, yeah, but you still have Wilson Rodriguez and Gabriel Wellis.
Yeah.
You know, like those two fights, you know, that alone right there.
Great fight with, you know, Gabriel Ellis, you know, a guy that really kind of shelled up for a moment, lost his love from boxing after the death of the fighter, which I believe was Angel's son. I can't remember his name. And then wanted to come back. Wanted to come back, and he faced one of the most entertaining, exciting, hard-hitting, gutsy fighters in the world, Arturo Gatti. And you see this guy not holding back. Here was a guy that his fights prior to that, stepping into Arturo Gatti, he was holding back, you know, and that's why they needed to take a step back. But he came back, and he just tried to take out Arturo Gatti's head. And I remember that uppercut, his head, you know, when Gable just landed that perfect uppercut and Arturo Gatti's head just swiveled, you know, and you saw just the pain, the anguish of that uppercut. But then it was like right when you thought this guy was just going to fold and say, you know what, I'm packing it in, I'm going home. He turned up the heat. No wonder why they called him the Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, he's just unbelievable. You know, that nobody's head swiveled quite like Arturo Gatti's.
Well, except Prince Hamed. His head swiveled. You know,
yeah.
Not just his head though. His whole spine would swivel when you hit him because of the way he. You know, his movement was just really weird and stuff.
Yeah, he just so off balance. The Barrera fight is just he's just. It's like Roberto Duran and scoring the hair. You know, his hair would always like fly all over the place when he wore it long. With Hamed, you like score the body because you're just like flying all over the place, you know, every time you kind of tap him.
I had not, you know what, it had been a long time, I think, and we were talking about the Julio Cesar Chavez fight, which when he had faced Sergio Martinez, which was a very anticipated bout, a fight that we had 2 years ago said this was a mismatch, it shouldn't have happened, because if it does, Martinez was basically going to school him. Well, guess what? That change of thought didn't change that far. And we were talking about it, and I said, I had a huge smile on my face watching this kid literally get outboxed and beaten. And I was sitting back and thinking, I don't remember the last time I was so excited to see somebody get a whooping that they deserved. I was hoping I was going to see that on the 13th, but that, you know, they deserved it. They really did, you know. This wasn't a fighter that got underneath their skin and was basically getting hand-fed, getting whatever they wanted. So when we saw Marco Antonio Barrera, who everybody had written him off, you know, because here was the style that Marco was coming with to literally step forward, Mexican style, come straight, and I've heard it numerous times. I remember back, I don't know if you remember this, when HBO would refer to Mexican fighters as not very intelligent fighters. They just moved forward and they threw punches. That's what made them special. And I used to take offense to that. I'd be like, what? We're not intelligent. What about Salvador Sanchez? I can name plenty of Mexican fighters that are very, you know, intelligent fighters that have great ring generalship. But Barrera at that time didn't seem to carry that. And how special was it to see a brawler become into a boxer? It was phenomenal.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, sorry, I'm reading something on our next guest, which is coming up in just a just a few seconds. War a week, Don, actually about, what, 10 minutes?
We got Don Chargan coming on about 10 minutes, and then we got Leo Santa Cruz coming on a few minutes after that, maybe about 20 minutes after him, and we'll have our last two guests, and then we'll close it up with the fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. 347-215-7598. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. We didn't have any luck getting Victor Chinian. The area code is just not matching, unfortunately, that we're punching in. But you know what? We'll figure it out, and hopefully we'll get him on next week. It is how it is here on a live show.
Yeah. And calling somebody all the way across the world. I'm excited to have Mr. Chargan on. You know, it's a guy that has really just been there since the very beginning.
And you know what? He's the pioneer for Northern California and putting up a lot of fights. And he's going back to a place he hasn't been to, which is the
Memorial Auditorium in Sacramento, California.
Yeah.
I cannot wait. I wish they would have pulled out of the fight much sooner because I wanted to travel up to Sacramento, but it's a little late in the game now. And just not going to do it. But
you know what? I was going to go to this fight, ready to go. I even took the day off. So first of all, and there's a reason why I took the day off. I mean, the reason I took the day off was for the fight. This fight card is just stacked. There's a lot. You got Guy Robb on there. You got Jorge Linares doing his comeback. I mean, there's a lot of good fighters on this card. So it's going to be a special night, out there at the Memorial Auditorium. But the reason I'm not going to be able to go is I got to say congratulations to my sister who just had a baby, my niece, who was just born. And so I'm going to be heading out to San Jose, California to hold my newborn niece.
That's touching.
It is touching. You know? and then I'm going to drop her because she made me miss the fight. You know?
Yeah.
You got to drop the kids here and there once in a while, Gabriel. I don't know, if you ever had a chance to hold any of your nieces and nephews and like that, but you got to drop them once, Or maybe, hang them upside down by the leg and all that. I remember I used to do that to my kids and freak everybody out, hang them upside down and slap them in the back of their little buttocks there and stuff. But anyways, back to boxing. Enough about children and stuff. I see these kids all day.
I can't relate to the people with kids, but the Memorial Auditorium, one of my all-time favorite venues, man. It's a venue that I saw several fights at, and it's just the tickets are. I'm sure he'll let us know the ticket prices, but they're very affordable. I think like 20 seats at the balcony, and then it goes. I think it was like $60 was like ringside. Really, just affordable club seats, And the ringside's good. They're kind of like, I think, folding chairs, as I remember, on the floor. But the balcony is what it's all about, the $20 seats, because you can look right over into the ring. It just gives a vantage that is sorely missed. If you've never been to the balcony, like the Blue Horizon or something like that, you can really see all the action. It's a lot different than the being ringside and looking up through the ropes. It's a much better vantage point. The Memorial, it was cool. I remember Larios Vasquez 2 was my favorite fight that I got to see live there. And I was walking home. I didn't even know the fight were in town. And it was actually trying to be Friday night fights. And boom, bought this ticket right there, like a $60 ticket, and was like in the third row. And some friends of mine were in the front, and there was an empty seat, so I went to the first row. And it was a hell of a war. It was like a 12-round fight. And then Vasquez got knocked out at the end. The Memorial, if you haven't and you're in the area, you got to go. You just have to go. It's affordable and it's just – it'll be memorable. Absolutely.
Well, there you go.
Linares.
Yeah. Whatever happened to him anyways? Talking about
– you just cut out.
My fans, you want to call him 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Let's talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk with myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya, man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin, who Mr. Dave Chin is going to see a couple callers that have been on hold. He's going to get to you guys right now. Hopefully our next guest, Mr. Don Chargan, who's been around since 1951, man. He's been a promoter for quite some time. He's got, 150 world title fight under his belt that he's promoted. It's a lot of titles there, man. A lot of fight, a lot of witness of fights, and I bet you he's got some stories to tell here on Leaving in the Ring.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Yeah, he used to be the matchmaker for the Olympic Auditorium for, I think it was from 64 to like 84. And before that, though, he'd worked at the Oakland Auditorium, working there for Dundee, and he was the matchmaker for him. And then all the shows that he was doing in Sacramento and developing that area. Remember, he had like what Tony Lopez, Loretta Garza, Willie Joran were the main ones. And Joran seemed to be where it all ended. I remember I knew a guy that had a piece of Willie Joran, and he was always kind of like pulling out of fights and postponing fights, and then he got finally on major TV and got clowned by Oscar Larios at home. I think he dropped in like the first round, and that was kind of the end.
That was the end
of Willie,
right? You know what? I think we have Mr. Don Targan with us, so he can tell us a little bit more about his experience of being a promoter here and being a pioneer for, like I said, Northern California, among other spots too as well. Mr. Don, do we have you on live here on Leaving the Ring?
Yes, I'm here, Dave. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming on and speaking to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. First off, glad to hear that you're back, you know, at a place you haven't been to for quite some time at the Memorial Auditorium, and putting on, it's going to be a hell of a show Saturday night, you know, and I know that getting a lot of names and good names and a good card is one of the toughest things to do in boxing, because you have so many personalities you have to deal with, and you have to have the worries and the backup plans of guys falling out of this card. But it looks like this card is staying solid and ready to go for Saturday.
It is, and we're very pleased, and I'm just so happy to be back at the Memorial. It's been 11 years since my last fight there was Oscar Larios against Israel Vasquez. And that was just a great, great fight. Larios knocked him out in the last round. And it was ESPN's fight of the year. It would have been everybody's fight of the year, except the following night was Gatti and Mickey Ward.
Right.
That's right.
So,
I was at that fight.
So
we
had to take a back seat to that.
I was at that fight. I was talking about that right before you came on the air. It was amazing.
I heard you, and with great memories. And then Oscar, after that, knocked out Willie Jorn to win the title. And I was associated with Larios for quite a while after, until he lost the title.
How did you? I mean, your history goes back so far. How did you first get involved? And you got involved specifically as a matchmaker. What about that part of the business attracted you?
Well, I'll tell you how it really happened. In the 40s, I went to Bellarmine Prep in San Jose, and we had a boxing team. I boxed on the boxing team. You know, it was only high school boxing, but the Jesuits ran the school, and they loved boxing, and we went all over. We traveled, which was a big, big trip in those days, to go to Las Vegas to box the high school there. And that was my junior year in 44. In 1945, they thought I had some kind of heart murmur, and wouldn't allow me to box. And they made me the coach of the team. Well, I didn't know any more than any of my teammates, so I used to go to the pro gym to try to learn a little bit. And that's how it started. I went to the pro gym and became interested in boxing. And then I helped a few promoters out and decided that I wanted to put on fights. Then I started promoting in San Jose and Oakland, and then the 50s. I've been coming back and forth in Sacramento since the 50s. I was in partners with Jackie King here in the 50s when we promoted Joey Lopes, who was Sacramento's first big, big drawing card. And then even my 20 years at the Olympic, my wife used to come up to Sacramento and run the Sacramento shows because I was so busy with the weekly TV show, and we were, you know, very, very successful. Then came our champions, Tony Lopez, Loretto Garza, Willie Jorn, but mixed in there, Bobby Chacon won his first world title for me in Los Angeles by knocking out Ernesto Marcano, who was the world champion. And, you know, Bobby had moved to Oroville and was a big card here in Sacramento. And that
about
close to, yeah, to the present.
What do you think? It seemed like after Willie lost the title, I know Golden Boy was doing shows, and you guys still do shows in the area. I moved to L.A., so I'm not as in touch with that scene. But it seemed like the local fights didn't happen as much, and the Memorial died as a venue. Why is that? Why is it more of a fight town?
Well, I'll tell you really, and we hope it's corrected, but we had, you know, quite a few union problems in that at the Memorial. It was always one of my favorite spots to hold a fight because it's just the visuals there at the Memorial are great. I mean, you can't, when they say that you have a certain house and there's not a bad seat, well, that's a Memorial. I mean, you get your balconies, it hangs over the ring. It's, everybody has a great seat. And we wanted to go there, but then Tony and Loretto, they outgrew the Memorial, and we moved to Arco, and they both drew such tremendous gates that, you know, as strictly as a businessman, I couldn't ask him to go back to the Memorial. But I did, after they were on with, you know, with the Larios fat and that, I did go back, and we hope this is going to be the start of many, many more fights for the old Sacramento Wall.
You know, you got one of the most exciting and action-packed prospects out there with Ray Woods, who's a guy, Rob.
Absolutely.
Don, how important was it to make sure that, because this is something that boxing is kind of just kind of veered away from, is by keeping guys in their hometown and kind of trying to get them over to Las Vegas all the time. How exciting is it for, not just for yourself, but for the fighter himself to stay around the neighborhood to get the exposure around his own?
That is the lifeblood of boxing, that people, that even, you know, I'm a consultant. I'm the senior advisor for Golden Boy. The big companies, they've lost sight of that, like, I don't want to be repetitious, but the lifeblood of boxing is towns like Sacramento and that, and developing the local kids. I mean, I've been, like, putting shows on all the smaller venues around here, like Fairfield and Woodland, and I've used Guy Robb, and we have another kid from town here by the name of John Abella. He's 2-0, and Tony Lopez was the one that Tony got a hold of me and said, "Don, right up your alley. This kid is one of the best things I've seen for a green kid." He says, "I boxed an exhibition for charity with him, and he is terrific. You got to use him because I know that you can, that you will build him and develop him right." And so that's why we have him on this card. But, you know, we've got the local kid, a kid named Jonathan Chica. He's from San Francisco, but we've been using him here in this area, a good ticket seller. Another kid from San Jose, Andy Vences, terrific following. Both these kids have sold a couple hundred tickets for a Saturday night show, and it's terrific. I love working with these young kids like this, and watch them, you know, to develop their following. And if they have that ability, we really try to bring it out in them.
What do you think? I mean, you've been in this business for so long. What do you think that for the newcomers into the business of boxing, what do you think they have lost and lacked of your trade of matchmaking, or by trying to keep it in the same area to develop them? What do you think they've lacked in that?
Well, listen, I'll tell you what is lost. I worked for the greatest promoter that ever lived in Eileen Eaton at the Olympic Auditorium. She was a little gal that was so bright. She had the quickest mind in that. In 1940, they sent her to the Olympic to find out why things weren't going good. She phoned up to the people that owned it and said, you're not doing good because they're stealing you blind. She had never been to a professional fight, an amateur fight, anything. And they said, well, Eileen, you found this out in 24 hours? Good, you stay there. She stayed there. And the first fight that she ever saw or promoted was the great Henry Armstrong, who, you know, had three world champions at the same championships at the same time and was a great, great fighter. But she went on, and she was so bright. And she used to tell me when she brought me down after we had great success with opening the Oakland Coliseum Arena, she brought me and my wife to Los Angeles, made me her matchmaker, and my wife was a building manager. And those were the greatest 20 years of my life. And she used to tell me, I'm your boss, but the fight fan is your real boss.
Right.
And I want you, she says, I want you to develop fighters, but I don't want fighters developed by one round and two round knockouts. If you can develop them, you put them in tough, and that's why we're successful. Nowadays, everybody, the TV companies, everybody has to be undefeated. And, you know, your greatest fighters, Ali, the Joe Louis's, the Sugar Ray Robinson, they all lost fights. Now, television, if you're not 20-0, they say, well, gee, what's wrong? He lost the fight. And it's terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think that the network's becoming involved and becoming basically promoters themselves or sanctioning bodies in some cases as hurt before? Or altered it?
Of course. Yeah, no, they become too involved with record. I mean, records now, oh, my God. I mean, everybody always talks of good old days. Sure, we used to all lie about records. You know, guys, record, maybe we would exaggerate it a little bit. But now, oh, my gosh, God help you if the fighter is 17-2. Oh, how did he lose two fights? What happened?
Let me ask you about this. What you said brought something up to my attention that you might be aware of. I don't know if you had heard about the World Series of Boxing, that semi-pro league that had happened, that's still going on. But a lot of those fighters that are coming out of the Olympic class and that are veterans of that, the California Commission and the other commissions are counting those fights as pro fights. So you've got guys that you would consider a prospect, you got a hold of them, but that are like 2-3, but against world-class opposition. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I've heard about it. But you know what they're doing? I've talked to them. They in fact, I'll tell you, my agent, it was a compliment. They called and wanted to hire me. But it's
nice.
You know, it's just, you know, really, I can't say it's an out-and-out scam, but it's, you know, it's not good. You have to have your amateur program and your professional program. The trouble with our amateurs, why we do so bad in the Olympics and everything, is there's more politics and more political things involved in amateur boxing than there's ever been in pro boxing. It's just, it's terrible.
Because it's so international and it's kind of big business for some of these countries, right?
It's got, you've got these directors of this, directors of that. They're all on salaries. They're this. They have their favorites that they want to win. It's terrible. They talk about the days of the mob and all that involved in boxing. These guys are supposedly solid citizens. They're worse.
That's great.
Listen, I'm always in trouble for speaking my mind, but you asked me, and you got Gabe Montoya there, who's a very good writer.
I kind of speak my mind.
He will uncover this sometime.
I'm hoping to. You know, my thing is just, for you as a matchmaker and a promoter, how would you look at those kids if you're stuck with, you know, like Javier Torres, who's, I think, kind of gold in a sense. He doesn't have a big knockout punch. Good kid, but he's got a bad record now. How would you look at a guy like that? What do you do with him?
Well, no, listen, you try. You get a guy, and he's, listen, I have a kid fighting Guy Robb tomorrow, Saturday night. His name is Adolfo Landeros. His record is something like 20 wins and 27 losses. But don't let that fool you. This is a double tough kid. I mean, he looks like he's 18 and he's 31 years old. He has fought everybody. I've used him. He saves the show on almost every card. And him and Guy, I'll tell you, they're going to tear the joint down.
You know, speaking about losses, Don, Linares and Guy are coming off losses. And you know,
Guy got a win since his loss.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I take that back. You're absolutely right. But, you know, sometimes you have fans, they want to see these guys immediately get back into somebody with somebody that is a top tier.
Oh, absolutely. You want to give what we call a confidence fight.
Right. You know, and I believe in confidence fights.
You know, I do, too. Now, a confidence fight is different than what we call a walkover.
Right.
What's the difference?
The guy's confidence fight, the guy was in there to fight, and the guy was trying to win. Guy beat him, but the guy, a walkover fight is you walk out and you hit the guy in the shoulder, and he's gone.
I gotcha. Okay, yeah, so the confidence fight is you do want a little bit of resistance, but that you want to be able to have your guy overcome.
That's right, but that's the only way a fighter can be developed. You can't. If you get a fighter and you give them 12, 13 straight wins, and they're 1, 2, and 3-round knockouts with not too much resistance, then in the 14th fight, you put them in with a 6-4 guy, but a double tough guy that has got a good chin, and he'll fire back, and it goes, you start getting some rounds out of it, and they carries him in deep water, the 14th, and the guy usually folds.
Let me ask you this. How many walkout fights have you either witnessed or been, you know, unfortunately had to be involved in, but have backfired?
Oh, yeah. You know, they do once in a while. They do. But you don't, what I'm getting at, you can't build a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
With those kind of shows, and everybody, first of all, you make a mistake by signing too many fighters. Now, I'll tell you, both Golden Boy, who pay me, and I'm, you know, like I told you, senior advisor, and their biggest competitor, Top Rank, they both signed too many fighters. They have so many fighters under contract. That's what? So the matchmaker's hands are tied. You go, you give a guy a big bonus. And, oh, my God, you can't get them beat. And they've got to be careful. So what happened? Who suffered?
Yeah.
The fans, because you get a one-round fight, a two-round fight, and you keep repeating it.
You get bored after a while.
Like,
that's not impressive.
Of course.
And nobody learns anything. You know,
no.
That's the thing. Is you want the guy to face... I mean, is the formula different for everybody?
That's
but, I mean,
why when I tell you about Eileen, when she said, the fans are your boss. They're the ones. I don't want to... Do you know that in 20 years, we signed one fighter to a promotional contract, and we had many, many champions during that time. The only fighter we ever signed to promotional contract was Carlos Palomino, the welterweight champion.
Yes.
And the only reason we signed him to a contract is I got a call one morning, and it was from Mrs. Eaton. She said, Don, get Carlos in, sign him to a promotional contract. And I said, why, Eileen, what made you change? And she mentioned the promoter who shall remain nameless. Gabriel will figure it out. he's trying to steal Palomino. And that's why. And we lost some great fighters because we wouldn't sign him. Fighters like Danny Little Red Lopez, Bobby Chacon, and many more. Because Eileen, her favorite saying was, honey, if they don't want us, we don't want them. And
right.
That's the way she operated, and very, very successfully.
Wow.
You know, being the senior advisor, Don, how frustrating, though, is sometimes in your area of expertise.
Oh, it is. It is. They're young. I love their matchmakers. I broke them both in. Especially Eric Gomez. He's like a son to me. And he's a good, terrific matchmaker. And he no telling how good he could be. But when you have fighters that you give bonuses to and everybody in your organizations expect them to win, your hands are tied. And
especially
not talking
if
on the preliminary thing.
Yeah,
main
it is.
No, you can put them in tough.
Right.
Because especially, I mean, a matchmaker is only as good as the fighter, really, right? I mean, ultimately.
Of course. It's like my other pet peeve. You'll get some feedback when I make this next statement. The most overrated thing in boxing is trainers.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
A trainer is so overrated. Believe me, Freddie Roach is a terrific trainer. He was as good a trainer 10 years ago.
Right.
But he didn't have Manny Pacquiao then.
Right.
When you get a good fighter, you're a great trainer. Listen, my granddaughter, when Sugar Ray Robinson, who was my all-time favorite fighter, when he was young and going great, my granddaughter could have trained him, and they would have said she was a great trainer because of Ray Robinson. But that's the way it worked. What you need in the corner, and I'll tell you this, Angelo Dundee was the greatest, a motivator. Well, if you have that motivator in there, that is better. The trainers go out, they go through the motions. They give you that look, and they shake their head, and everybody thinks, oh, my God, this guy is brilliant. He knows everything he's doing. It's so exaggerated. I know. Listen, let me tell you something. In 1957, the Hollywood Legion and the Olympic were two clubs in Los Angeles, and the old Hollywood Legion was a thing of beauty. You'd go there, people like Betty Grable and George Raft and Carol Landis. I know I'm dating myself, but they would be at ringside. And all these beautiful stars and starlets would be there. And in 1957, I was young and was resented because I started off, you know, pretty successful. And I promoted my own shows, had my own fighters, and I had more main events at Hollywood Legion than any other manager. And I knew nothing. I did, what I didn't know was that I would get up every morning and make sure the fighters did the road work. I was in the gym every day to make sure they worked out, period. I didn't sit there stroking my chin and say, put your left hand 3 inches higher and your right hand, all baloney.
So, are you gonna? The last time we finally got to meet when I was in
we were in Fairfield, California.
Thank you, Fairfield.
Yeah.
And it seemed like you weren't gonna get the memorial back into play, and now all of a sudden you do have, and you got a nice headliner in Jorge Linares, who's a fun fighter to watch.
And you got history with that too. He's
and hey, this Japanese kid, this. You know the fight, I'll tell you how important this Japanese kid is. Linares also was handled by Mr. Akiko Honda, who's one of the most respected people in boxing. And Kamagai, who is 21-0 with 18 knockouts, is such a card. The fight is being televised back to Japan.
Mm.
All because of him and Linares, you know, trains and now is based back in Japan.
At the Tekken Gym, right?
Yeah, right. That's it. That's Mr. Honda's company. But he will be here his first time in Sacramento. And he's one of the giants of boxing.
Well, I mean, it's nice to just see that venue kind of come back alive. I mean, the ticket sales been brisk, I imagine. I mean, is it still a fight town? Or is it
They're not. They could be better. I mean, what we're running into is the A's and the Giants. It's always something. If it's not a real softball game, it's the Giants and the A's. You know,
right.
I'm so used to that.
But, and who thought the A's would be back in the mix?
the what?
Nobody thought the A's would be back in the mix.
Who thought the A's were going to win that last game and get back in the
That's
mix?
That's right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm a baseball fan. I'll give you a little something different. about 8-10 years ago, at one of the big fights in Vegas, I'm sitting there with my wife, and next to me is Derek Jeter. And somebody come up and introduce me to him. And anyway, he asked me, 20, 30 questions on boxing. And this guy was such a nice, nice guy. I had been a Yankee hater all my life and found myself rooting for the Yankees because of Derek Jeter. And, I was so happy when they won last night. But he's a real boxing fan.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, we have another guest on deck, a young champion, Leo Santa Cruz. I imagine you're familiar with him.
Hey, listen, Leo Santa Cruz, let me tell you something. I saw him, his last fight, when he knocked out Eric Morrell, stopped Eric Morrell. This is the best young fighter in boxing today. He is as good a body puncher as I've seen in 30 years. I mean this sincerely. This kid, in fact, Bill Kaplan, the dean of all publicists, I think he told Leo this. He told him this at a press conference yesterday or the day before. But this kid is our really next superstar. You're going to be proud to say that someday you had him on your show, because he is the real deal.
I agree.
Yeah,
you know, he's action. He's everything we want to see. And
listen,
just,
I'm saying this, and we don't even know each other. I'm saying this just from watching him fight. This kid is terrific.
He is exciting. Don, I want to thank you again for taking the time to speak to us.
It's really nice. And Gabe, you keep coming with those hard-hitting stories.
I appreciate that. I'll do my best. I just try to be honest, you know.
I know it, and I enjoy it. Listen, even if you take a couple swipes at me, it doesn't bother me because maybe I've got it coming. But, nope, I like that.
We all got it coming, John.
Yeah, one way or another.
Let me ask you just real quick. Arturo Gatti, Hall of Famer or no?
I think so. From what he brought to boxing, he was a real good fighter, not a great fighter, but the crowds he drew and everything. Yeah, he probably should get a mention as a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely, we agree on that. Absolutely.
Yeah, without question.
Yeah. Don, again, thanks again. It was a pleasure speaking to you. We got to get you on again.
No,
a lot of fun. A lot of fun talking to you.
Okay, listen, anytime, it'd be nice talking to you guys.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
You have a great night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hall of Famer Don Chargan, man. What a great interview he gave. You know, we did have a chance to talk to him at the Fairfield event, but it wasn't this in depth. It was because it was so busy. There were so many people there.
He was there, and then it was a trip. It was his 80s, and he was there, and then he was gone. Like he was sitting down, like he was tired. I turned my back for a second, turned back around, and he was off promoting somewhere else in the corner. It's like
still got it. Yeah, he still got it. I mean, we were just talking to him really briefly, and he was even promoting the Lara's fight before they had the venue, and he was like, "Yeah, go ahead, announce that. Let the world know that we're going to have him, and he's going to be in the fight town of Sacramento." You know, we're going to get Leo Santa Cruz here on with us here on Leaving the Ring, calling him in right now. We can talk to him. Going fast pace here on Leaving the Ring as always, and we're glad to be back. We're out for a little bit. Took a little vacation among ourselves here. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. So we are about to. Let's see what happened here.
I don't know. Some guy put a man, I wish I would have seen that tweet. Sorry about that, Steven. I will ask him at some point.
Then hopefully we answer right now. It said something was wrong. What were you going to say about that tweet?
He was saying that he wants to know if Don Bergen has the Bobby Chacon versus Freddie Roach fight, which is the holy grail of boxing film.
Ooh, yeah. Hey, Leo Santa Cruz, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, brother, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring Radio. You just got out of training camp, and we had Hall of Famer Don Chargan, the promoter, and he had a throw in his sense about you, and he was just saying, "Here's the next biggest thing in boxing, Leo Santa Cruz."
Yeah.
That's kind of like
Yeah.
His exact quote was, "Leo Santa Cruz is as good a body puncher as I've seen in 30 years." This is a guy that's, I don't know if you know Don Chargan, but yeah, he's kind of seen it all. It was pretty cool as a lead in for having you on. This is Gabriel. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Really excited that you took the time to talk to us, man.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for inviting me. It's an honor for me to be here, and I'm very happy.
So, so many people. I mean, I witnessing you, watching you fight. It's pure action, and watching what you did to Eric Morrell, which nobody's been able to really do. I mean, Eric Morrell fought Abner Morris, who's one of the top guys in the bantamweight divisions. You know, one of the big dogs. But you look like because the question was experience. Were you going to be able to handle a guy that used his feet a lot? And you cut the ring off. You used a lot of pressure, a lot of body shots. Did you think that you were going to be successful early on, or did you think that you were going to have to work for that success?
Yeah, I knew I was going to have to work, since the beginning, I was going to have to struggled really hard so I could do that because I knew he was a really experienced guy and he had a good record. He was really good. He was two-time world champion. And so I knew, but we worked in the gym really hard. We worked, me and my dad worked to go to the body, to cut the ring off, and we were trying to kill his legs. That was our main goal, to kill his legs. And I didn't know it was going to come so early in the fifth round, but yeah, thank God it came out and it was as planned.
Leo, how surprised were you? I mean, because I was majorly surprised. I don't know about you, Gabriel. We had I don't think we talked about that, about the stop. We talked about the fight, but the stoppage alone. How surprised, Leo, were you seeing that he didn't want to get off that stool, that he took the initiative? He understood that. He understands his body. Every fighter like yourself understand your body. But sometimes there's no quit in a fighter. But with Morrell, you basically took out the fight out of him. How surprised were you that you were able to do that in five rounds?
Oh, I was really surprised because when I was hitting him in the body, it didn't look like it was really hurting him. He didn't really show it in his face, but I think it was really affecting him. But yeah, I was really surprised because the fighter he was, and he's a really good fighter, a lot of experience, and since nobody had ever stopped him and everything, that's for the truth. I didn't think I was gonna stop him. I knew I have good body tests and everything, but I didn't think I was gonna stop them. The fight was gonna go to distance. But my dad, he told me if you work the body like how we're training and everything, he's not gonna go to distance. But and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do that and see what happens, and it did. But I was really surprised.
I was surprised that he came right to you. That was the thing, because the bar that I set was if. And I think you're a very good fighter, and I said this will show that he's heading towards special if he could stop a guy like Eric Morrell, who I thought would be old and kind of like stink it out, move, and do all those things. Instead, he went right to you. Did that throw you at all, or were you just like, fine, let's get it on?
Yeah, no, it was perfect for me because I have more – it's much better for me if a guy stands in front of me. Then since, and I think in the press conference, he said that he was going to box me, that he was going to take me to school. So I was expecting for him to box me and to move a lot. But probably my pressure or maybe my style made him stay there. I don't know, maybe he was trying to box, but he couldn't. So I think maybe my style was the one that made him stay in front of me.
Did you set at stopping him for yourself, or is that always your intention?
My what?
Like, do you always say, like, I need to stop my opponent? That's the whole point for you heading into a fight? Or for this one, did you say, you don't want to raise the bar for myself, I want to stop Eric Morrell?
Yeah, that was, because at the beginning I didn't have that much knuckles, so I was like, oh, I want to have more knuckles. So every time I step in the fight, I wanted to knock the guys out. But for this fight, it was mostly my main goal, because they told me that he was a really tough guy that nobody had ever stopped. And with the experience he had and everything, they told me that if I stopped him, that it was going to be a big win in my career, and that it was going to be a big thing we were going to come. So, yeah, I trained really hard in the gym and with my dad, and we really worked really hard to do that, and we did it.
Is it something, learning how to stop somebody? I mean, is it a skill? Is it a mental thing? Is it a combination of things? Learning how to get range and timing in that? Did you really feel like, did you're focusing in on like knocking people out or stopping people? What is it a combination of? What's the formula?
Yeah, I think it's in your mind that you have to, if you put it in your head and you work hard, and little by little you get more experience, and you'll be like, you learn how to combine punches, and little by little you'll be learning more, and you get more experience, and you learn how to stop guys. You get more confident in yourself.
You know, when you were mentioned and talked about, and I was watching the fights prior for this Morrell fight, you know, I always keep a kind of reserve, you know, thinking, okay, let's see how good he is, you know. And when this fight was announced and I saw how you dismantled him, which, like yourself, I was really surprised, and I was very, very, very impressed with it because, like you mentioned, here's a guy that has experience. He's been there. He was an Olympian. Hadn't been stopped. And fought by far one of the best bantamweights we got there, Abner Morris. My frame of thought was if Morris couldn't stop him, Santa Cruz can't do it either. I thought you were going to beat him for, you know, the amount of rounds they were giving you guys, but it was so impressive what you did. Saying that now, though, do you feel that you need to take now the initiative step of challenging tougher opposition, or do you continue trying to build your craft? I mean, this was a great win. This was a great victory for you.
Yeah.
But do you go overconfident and try to go for the bigger guys out there?
No, that's it. No, I don't go overconfident. I still have a lot to learn. I still need to get a lot of experience. And because when you're up there in the ring, it's different. So I still want to get, like, probably like a few more fights and get a little bit more experience, build myself a little bit more up, and then probably go with big guys because I still have a lot to learn. And there's still, I don't get confident. I don't underestimate any fighter. But I do hard, and I'm always in the gym training. So that's, I think that's the main goal, that to keep training hard and have discipline in the sport. And when, once the right time comes, you, the promoters or the right, so you have to fight the good fighters like Amner Mares or Nonito or all those fighters like that.
You know, when we talk about, when we think about Mexican fighters, I mean, you know, Canelo is kind of fought his way into getting the respect and the exposure he pretty much has deserved. You know, he did, but he's kind of slowed down. He's not fighting the who's and the what's out there. He's fighting the selective wins there. And that's not the traditional way of how Mexicanos do it. Do you think that you need to stay traditional and fight all the tough fights before you get to that glory road?
That's true. I think what the people, I'll give what the people want. If they want me already to fight, I think I'll fight them because we fight for the people. They're the one that pay the ticket. They're the one that get you up there. So, like me, as long as the people want it and they ask for it, I'll give them whatever they want. Even if I think I won't give them, I'll still try my best and try to give the fans and the other people what they want.
Talk to us a little bit about the gym that you work out at, and I'm curious. Do you like to change up sparring partners? Do you work with a certain group of guys all the time? What are your habits are like there?
Yeah, right there in the gym, I go. I train from 10 in the morning, and I get like up to. Sometimes my dad, he's the one that gives me my sparring, so he gets. Sometimes I have sparred with 12 different guys, and like sometimes, like for 1 week, I start with probably three guys, like I do like three rounds with each or four rounds, and then the next week he changes me because I fight with different styles, like because my dad never, he doesn't want me to fight the same with the same different styles, so he changes it up like all the time. So I think that's like one of the main goals of how I'm improving a lot, and yeah, because he changes it up, like I fight with three different guys at the same time.
Three guys at the same time?
Yeah, like, on the same day, I mean, yeah.
Gene, bro.
Yeah.
Went all at once.
Yeah,
she was like, dude, that's rough.
Yeah, not the ones, the same day. Like, I fought 4 months with one, and then 4 months with another one, and then 4 months with another one.
For you, I mean, because some guys will get, you know, use the same guys over and over again, and you get too comfortable, and there's like a respect level that develops. When that starts to happen, you guys just kind of move on to somebody else, and that way you're always kind of guessing and learning.
Yeah, I think I'm with like right there learning. We always try to learn, and whatever they tell me, I do it. And I'm a good learner, and I pay attention to what everybody tell me. And like you know, like some other fighters, sometimes they don't listen what they tell you, and they think they're ready. And me, well, I know I need to learn and. I'm always there for any advice they want to give me, and I don't care how bad they are. If I don't think it's right, I still listen to them. I still try to do it, and I think that's what's been helping me out a lot.
Where does your commitment to the body punching come from? How early on in your game did you learn that, or is that something that you've kind of developed more recently?
No, I think it's like since I was with my dad, like he was always watching Julio Chavez.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like when I started, he always told me that when I threw a body shot, he said that I had it naturally. So from that day on, he was working it all the time, and he always told me that a guy, you could hit them like a lot of times in the head, and they could take as many punches as you get them. But in the body, it doesn't matter how strong the fighter is. That once, if you come with a good shot, they're gonna go down. That it don't matter how strong they are. That once, sooner or later, they're gonna go down. So that's why since I saw that I have good body shots, we started working here like in the he has the bodyguard. Right there, we worked it a lot. Like every day, we're working it, and it's been paying off.
It seemed like last year there wasn't as much buzz about you. People weren't talking bad about you, but I didn't hear a lot of people saying, you know, that's the kid I need to see. This year, people can't get enough of you. I mean, you're doing media all over the place. I mean, you're at the press conference this week, even though I don't think they've announced your opponent just yet. How has that shift been for you, that you went from just being a fighter to all of a sudden being a commodity that everybody's talking about?
The fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited that has been happening. And well, I think if you work hard in the gym and you train really hard, and your time will come. Because I was training really hard and everything, but I didn't get the exposure on TV, or I didn't like let people get to see me. And then when I finally enjoyed time, I think that's right there when the doors opened for me and people to see me and to really see Leo Santa Cruz. And I think just from that on, I've been working a lot harder, because when you hear people talking about you, it gives you like motivation and it makes you want to work harder. And I think since that's what the main thing, you work hard in the gym. And I've always been working hard in the gym. I don't go out to parties. I don't go out. I always go to the gym. I come home, eat, rest, and then in the afternoon I go do my strength and conditioning. So, and only when I can, I do go like with my family and stuff. But I'm very disciplined to the sport.
You know, you're already pretty high up there. You know, out Eric Morales, it's definitely got to move you up pretty high in that category. In Victor Tini last week with his successful win. And with Joseph Abeko pretty much just staying at the division, do you look at those two guys as the next opponent to feed off of, or do you chase after the money, which would be against, you know, like Moreno and Dorian Morris, and you know, the guys that moved up in weight? What do you do?
Yeah, I think I prefer to fight Morris or Anselmo Moreno, because right there is where the bigger fights will come, and because Anselmo and Mares, they beat Dorshinin and Abeko, but Dorshinin's side, I don't really like it, because he don't really let you fight. He once you throw punches, he like grabs you and he doesn't let you fight. So I don't think that'll be a comfortable fight for me. And Abeko, yeah, I think I would like to fight with him probably. And if I beat him and everything comes out good, then I'll probably like to face probably Mares or Moreno, my promoter or my dad and my manager, whoever they think I'm ready for. I'll fight anybody.
How about a compadre like Jorge Arce, who brings a lot of money? You know, I mean, there's a guy, an action-packed guy, blood all over the place, the lollipop kid. How about him? Would you consider fighting a guy like him?
Yeah, definitely. I would like to fight him, because he's a really fan. He has a lot of fans, Mexican fans. And then He comes forward. He's a pressure fighter. He's like, he always, and I think that if me and him fight, we will get like the fans that really, really war, that they will enjoy, because he doesn't like quitting. And me, I never expect him to quit either. Even if I fall, I'm expecting to get right back up and do what I can. And if I beat him, well, I think I'm going to get all the Mexican fans, because he's a really, really Mexican fan. So if I beat him, I think I'm going to get more fans, and Mexico will like me more.
Leo, before I let you go, I got one more question for you. which we all admire, is your body shots and your intensity of coming forward and giving us all action. But if you were on the outside of the ring looking in and watching yourself, what is one thing that you think that needs to be corrected and fixed?
The truth, I think that sometimes, like, when I'm right there, I put, like, my hands a little bit down. Like, I try to fix my shorts, like, put them down. I think that one of the things I would correct. But also, I think sometimes I need to box, like, box a little bit more, because I could do it, like, in the sparring and everything. I box and everything, but once I'm up there, like, since I'm, you know, Mexican, they like to stay there and throw punches.
Right.
So I'm, like, once up there, I feel like if I move or box, the fans are not going to like that. They want, because, you know, they like people fighting, kidding each other and everything. So if I move, I don't think the fans are really going to like that. I'm a fighter that comes forward and gives the people action.
I agree with you, man. I mean, I think if you decided to box,
yeah,
me as a fight fan and loving the way you fight, I'm going to be like, no, Leo, come on, man. Let your hands go, you know?
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
but for longevity,
yeah,
of course, you know, for yourself,
yeah,
health-wise, and to keep yourself going in the sport, boxing is the thing that does give the longevity. But we want to appreciate the warriors that go in there, man. Hey, Leo, again, man, thank you again for taking the time. It's really quick. If you got anything to say to, you know, La Gente Mexicanos, please be willing to do, say it in Spanish, so our Spanish-speaking listeners can get a sense and an appreciation of how much raza you have inside you.
Yeah, no, que dije a toda la gente mexicana, nomás que yo estoy entrenando muy duro para darles lo mejor de mí. Para entrenar duro y entreno aquí yo en el gimnasio siempre para cada round tiro yo más de como de 100 golpes y para darles un gran espectáculo a todo México y a todos los mexicanos y a todos los fans. Y yo siempre me paro duro para eso y ojalá me sigan mi carrera y me sigan apoyando, que yo siempre voy a estar aquí para darles lo mejor de mí y darles buenas peleas.
And for those out there that don't speak Spanish, well, it's that time for you to learn.
Yeah.
Yo, damn it.
Again, man, thank you. You know, and the time right now where we do need Mexican champions out there, myself and Gabriel being, you know, Mexicanos, we look forward, you know, and it's refreshing to see a young man like yourself carry not just the sport of what we love, but to carry the style of the Mexican tradition of how we fight and how we move forward, man. Thanks again, brother, a whole lot for coming on Leaving the Ring.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for inviting me. I was very happy to be here on the show, and I just appreciate you guys for having me here.
All right, brother.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much. All right. Take care, champion.
All right, thank you. You guys, too. All right, bye-bye.
All right, man.
Leo Santa Cruz, man, I like this kid, you know, I like his answer,
yeah.
Like, you know, not only do we like the way he fights, I like his personality, and he's an upbeat kid, straightforward, and he knows exactly what he's looking for and where he's heading to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now look, I want to get down to brass tacks here. I can still see the fourth quarter of the Rams game, so let's get to the fight schedule. we got nothing on Friday, and then we will move to right. Let's just do this. Coliseo, Ruben Rodriguez in Bayamon, Puerto Rico. Moises Fuentes, 15-1 versus Yvonne Calderon, 35-2-1. I'm going with the younger man. I think Calderon, the legs have gone bad.
Calderon has now become what Eric Morrell did, the mistake with Leo Santa Cruz, which is decide to try to trade. I think he's trying to hold every last bit. The first thing that goes, we know this in boxing, is your legs, and Calderon's legs have definitely left the island.
Yeah, without question. They have been voted off. Wilfredo Vasquez Jr., 21-2-1 versus Jonathan Oquendo, 22-2. That's a fun fight. Jose Gonzalez, 20-0 versus Yudi Bernardo, 13-0. I think this is for like a regional title. That should be an interesting fight. Victor Bisbal, 20-1 versus Alex Gonzalez, 20-7. at the Centro de Convenciones in Toluca, Mexico. Gee, I wonder which one of us doesn't speak the Spanish.
You're doing a hell of a good job, man. It's putting me to shame.
And I've got to shift over to Compayac, Por Pramuk, 45-3 versus Adrian Hernandez, 24-2-1, WBC junior flyweight belt. At the Memorial Auditorium, Sacramento, California, Fox Sports, Jorge Linares makes his return, 31-3 versus Hector Velasquez, 52-17-3. And underneath that is Yoshihiro Komagai, 21-0 versus Jorge Silva, 18-2-1. Yes, my Japanese is better than my Spanish. At the Sports Palace in Kiev, Ukraine, Zarbek Beysungurov, 27-1 versus Lucas Konechny, 48-3 for the WBO junior middleweight belt. And at the Polidevo, in Managua, Nicaragua, Ramon Gonzalez, 32-0 versus Felipe Salguero, 16-3-1. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
There goes your weekend fight schedule. And, this Saturday night for Solo Boxeo, it's a really exciting card. I can't wait. Guy Robbie, if you haven't had a chance, which a lot, if you're a hardcore fight fan, you've seen him. He had a great sensational fight with Joel Diaz Jr., no relation to the trainer. But he came up short. He was stopped. The referee did step in, which I thought was a rightful call for and stuff. But you could see Linares, too, get back in there since losing to Thompson. So it's going to be a great night of fights to see what direction these guys are going to be headed to. What are we going to see? So we're going to have a lot of fun. Hey, we're going to be back on Ustream. You know, we're going to come out back again. We'll make our announcement of what gym we're going to be at and do the Ustream thing. You know, we're still working on that, man. That's why we haven't decided to do one really soon. Ever since we went to Riverside, the Two Feathers gym we did with Josecito Lopez and Kristen Ima Oriella. But we're going to do it again, and we'll give that announcement later on, maybe next week. I don't know. Me and Gabriel got to figure it out. We do have some two gyms in mind, so just to let you guys know, we might be in Living Ring. We'll be in a city near you.
We should do like a raffle. You could win us, you know?
Yeah. There you go. A raffle, then been thrown out after a while after you hear us talking about boxing, solely about boxing and stuff all the time, you know? Hey, great site that I like to get on, the Chive. I don't know if you've seen that. Be Calm, Chive On. And if you haven't, yeah, go ahead and check that out. That's what I do sometimes on my spare time at work. I get on there and look at the Burn the Bra and Future Women's Back Problems. You have to check it out, Gabriel. It's funny. It's hilarious. You love it.
But the winners get us to come to your gym, and the losers get a year subscription to Queensbury Rules.
Oh no!
All right.
It's not Solo Boxeo. It's Fox Sports. It's not Telefuturo. It's on Fox. My bad. My mistake.
He threw that at us the day we were talking about it. He started. Promoters are always hilarious. You ask them, "How's it going?" "Oh, it's great. I've got this date coming up here, and then this date." They start throwing everything at you. I'm like, "Dude, I just want to know how you're doing." But nice to hear about the business.
Absolutely.
We got to have Don back on. That was
really
Remember the format we were talking about the other night. That's one I think that we should really consider having him on for like a full hour and really just – or as long as he wants. I mean, that there's so much history there. And for him to kind of pinpoint what's wrong with boxing and not do it in a negative way, but like, look, this is the way it always worked when it was at its top. Like, why aren't we doing this? Why are we ignoring small markets, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're just going haves and have-nots. It's just – if we make it a big event and put it in Vegas, people will come. And that's just, you know, they're not figuring out why people aren't coming. And
absolutely.
Perfectly, you know. So, Dave, as always, fun show. The Rams are on. I got to get going.
I got to get some food inside me. I got to eat, man.
My belly.
My mind is on. It's on a steak and a beer right now here. It's always fun. We've always had a great time. I appreciate everybody that tunes in and listens to Leaving the Ring religiously. Thanks to all the listeners' emails. We got a lot of emails asking, what the hell? Where in the hell have you guys gone? But you know what? We're back. We are back. Your boxing radio show that always seeks the truth and does 3 hours of boxing show and tries to give you the best content that we can provide. I want to thank everybody out there. Again, don't drink and drive. Be safe with your family. Gabriel, Till next week, brother.
Peace.